Hello. Before we get started, I want to say two things. One, of course, thank you to all our patrons, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Everyone who has bought things from our store, everyone who has bought t-shirts, everyone who has listened to our other shows, our Radio Free Midworlds, Days of Future Cast, and the like. All of our, you know, our REM show is coming 2017. The second thing I want to mention is, and I have to eat a tiny amount of crow on this, is just that this is an Obsidian game. It's my favorite game-making company. It's my favorite game company. We mentioned in the episode how there's not tons of, like, facts and stuff out there for it. So we missed some stuff in this episode. I just kind of want to head that off and let you guys know I'm aware of it before I get tons of tweets. I read a really excellent Let's Play of the evil ending that has tons of really cool detail that is the shit I eat up. It will be in the show notes. So I'm kind of considering that Let's Play to be supplemental reading to the episode. You know, Cole and I only have so many hours in the day. We can only go through the game one way. And the information on the other stuff is kind of hard. This is like Obsidian's lost game, it feels like. So please forgive us for that. Forgive me specifically because this is, you know, an area of passion for me. And please enjoy the episode. Thanks.
And so you have decided to slay the Spirit Drinker, but at great cost to yourself. It seems to have taken much out of you. Here you are, dying in my arms. Do you have any last words?
Hold me closer in. It's getting dark. Tell Annie M. the little yeller out.
Tell Tawny Tim I won't be coming home this Christmas.
Tell Scarlet I do give it him.
Pardon me.
Thank you. You love me. You really love me.
What the? You've recovered. And yes, I do love you. You respected my wall of the faithless, you ragamuffin.
Ooh! Somebody stop me!
What? Why would I stop you? I'm overjoyed. Is it time to gather your companions and venture forth?
It's party time! P-A-R-T. Why? Because I gotta!
Yes, time to gather your party. Oh, Mask, how I will miss you in your crazy antics.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a retro games podcast.
And this week we are continuing our discussion of Neverwinter Nights 2, The Mask of the Betrayer, starting in the middle of Chapter 2 with the Sunken City. This is, of course, an expansion pack. The first expansion pack for Neverwinter Nights 2 came out in 2007, developed by our good friends at Obsidian.
Yeah.
Woo, Obsidian. I don't know why I'm pandering.
I'm getting my obsidian tattoo. I do love them boys. It is good stuff. This is my winter of obsidian between this and tyranny. Way into it. So we're gonna get started right away. Just listen to the last episode to get you caught up. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine anyone is listening to this first, and if you are, you have made a grave error.
Yes, you have some homework to do.
You're a naughty boy. You're behind.
Yep. So just a back of the box summary. You are the main character of Neverwinter Nights 2, the main campaign.
Period.
Yep. You are the main character. Yes.
And go.
You have woken up in the east, in the east of the Forgotten Realms, with this horrible curse, this Spirit Eater curse, near the city of Mulsanne-Tyr, kind of on the edge of Fae, and you are trying to find a way to cure this curse, but it's going to get a little bit more complicated, and by a little bit I mean a lot.
Yes, cure or indulge, depending on how you want to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I really like the idea of summarizing it, where it's just like, okay, to summarize, you were the main character and you were involved in the plot. You meet some other characters that with their own, you know, conflicting goals and everything, but eventually you resolve them and overcome the central conflict.
Yeah,
I mean, but at great cost to yourself and with character growth.
And then no more episodes of the show come out.
Yeah, it's just like every episode. That's what people, when they want the objective game review thing.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
that's similar to that. Like, let's explain just the structure of storytelling in general. Yep. So one of the reason why we're going starting out with the Sunken City. The reason why we're going to the Sunken City is because this is the location of the Slumbering Coven, who apparently knows something of our curse.
Yes. And so the Sunken City is so called because it is below this kind of massive lake that for some reason has these gigantic tentacles raising out of it.
I love it. Like, again, just that we talked about how this has art direction in a way that Neverwinter Nights 2 Vanilla doesn't.
Yeah.
Just, you know, seeing these writhing tentacles in the fog. Like, it's one of the few times where, like, the this is a pretty good game for 1998. It really helps where, like, the draw distance is not great.
Yeah.
But it looks kind of foggy and stuff. So you just kind of see them. Like, when you get kind of close to these tentacles, they look a little goofy. Mm-hmm. But from a distance, they look very cool.
Yeah. So, like, the way this works is, I believe, so this building that we're looking out at is one of two things, depending on which plane you're in. It is either the haven for the Slumbering Coven, with all these petitioners standing outside of it on the shadow side, on the plane of shadow side, or it is this horrible maze full of hags and, you know, screaming tortured souls called the Skeen, on the prime material. And
yes,
your kind of introduction to this is, you know, you find this, you know, goofy guy on the beach in the prime material. You go through
a fisherman.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You go through a portal, and then you find out that he's actually, you know, his name's Fentimi, and he's a Dao.
You can actually, even when he's a fisherman, you can expose him.
Oh, okay, cool.
As a Dao, in that world where you can start, and your companions will do it too. And this might be tied to favorability ratings, which is kind of cool. Mm. They will start poking holes in his story.
Okay.
You know, it's just like, oh, there doesn't look like there's a lot of fish here. Like, this is a writhing tentacle lake of evil. You know, I don't know what these fish are, and why are you the only fisherman, and, like, you know, all these things. And then he has these things he'd fish up, like little treasures and stuff, in a box next to him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, go ahead and take them. I don't really care.
Yeah.
And your eyes will be like, why? What's... You know, like, why? Yeah, that's very strange as well.
What's the deal?
So eventually,
buddy,
you can kind of call him out, and you learn, you can learn early, or eventually you learn that he has a Dao.
Yes. A Dao being an elemental kin who is kind of half human, half like earth elemental. He's like an earth genie almost.
Yes. Listen to the Associated Monster of my podcast on Dao to learn about. There's Fabled City of Brass, and the Dao are the ones that live in the labyrinth under the earth.
Yeah, it's the continent sized I forget what it's called, but it's the continent sized maze that is constantly being excavated by earth elementals. What he wants to do is to go in and defeat this large earth elemental so he can recapture it and use it for his own purposes. And this is a way for you to kind of pass through and actually do, like, a combat dungeon instead of the social interaction way to get in. Like, it's a little bit more of the back door side of this, it feels like. But he gives you a key that will let you, you know, after you go to the building in the lake and the World of Shadow, open up the portal back to the prime material and get into the Skeen itself.
Yeah. And your companions do not want you to sell this earth elemental into slavery.
Right.
And the Dao makes, you know, pretty good arguments. That's like, well, you know, we use elementals all the time, you know, like,
Yeah.
Summoning elementals is not weird.
They're mindless.
Yeah, they're mindless. Like, there's a little bit of like, oh, like my companions are kind of being ridiculous about this, you know? I didn't actually, it's kind of funny. So I goofed this up. Like, I ended up going in that back way because I didn't know how to do the front way.
Okay.
Or I just kind of stumbled across it and I thought it was the primary way to go through it. So this is another articulation point where we kind of accidentally took different paths, which is cool. And even in that combat dungeon is very, can articulate a couple different ways too. Like, this is an impressively dense area.
Yeah. So I ended up doing a little bit of both because I thought that the back door was the only way to do it. There's a way to get into the front door. So everybody's coming here to meet the Slumbering Coven and kind of get their needs met. Right.
Yes.
But the line is incredibly long, and so like there's no way to get in, and the only way to get around that is if the line shrinks. So you have to go around to all of these people that are standing at the gates and like convince them to leave. So there's a Ganassi petitioner who was inside the city, but he had to go to the bathroom, and now he can't get back in.
He had to take a shit, and you have to like. You have to tease that out of him. Like, he doesn't want to say it.
He's embarrassed. Like, yeah. Well, see, there are no facilities inside, which is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
but it's like, you have to promise, like, hey, you know, I'll get in and I'll send for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it so much. That's very, very good.
Yeah. There's a Death Knight that it wasn't very memorable. There's an Illithid, however, that you can use your lore knowledge and your knowledge of the Gith to say that some Mind Slayers have chased you to the location and they're coming after you. they're coming mm-hmm. after you, and they're going to find him. So like, you get him to run or to run in fear. And that's how you kind of trick your way into the front door. I don't know what happens when you go into the front door. And I kind of am happy that I went the back way, because the back way is really interesting, if a tad long.
I like that thing with the Gith that you're talking about, where you can mention that. At the very least, also, you can, even if you don't have that lore knowledge and can mm-hmm. make the check, you can just be like, yeah, I know the Gith. You know, because that's the entirety of what this was about.
Yep.
You know, where the first adventure was like, no, I've slayed hundreds of Gith.
Yep.
You know, like I get Gith. So you head around the back way. I ended up doing the same thing. I didn't end up doing the front way. I kind of came from the backside, which meant all of the front way encounters were closed off to me.
Yeah.
I read about them online.
It looks really intense. Like, even if you're walking past them and they're non-aggressive, it's like several rooms of very high level enemies,
like demons and vampire lords and stuff that are, you can fight or not fight depending on how you deal with them.
Yeah.
You can also ignore them, which is like, but I ended up going to the back end of it. And I think that this is the second city is for me a mixed bag in this game, in that like all the flavor stuff that's here is cool. Mm-hmm. The layout of it, I think, is very annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the idea here is you're kind of in a maze where certain areas are blocked off by water. And
no, yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that I hate it.
It's actually
no. I hate it when you're in a place and then the layout changes depending on a water level.
Me too.
I've got some reservations about that from Zelda times.
Yeah, and that's not a controversial opinion, even though there is now kind of a weird backlash. Like there is a water dungeon resurgence of defenders now. I still think that it's really tedious and obnoxious. Yeah. But so there's that. The cool thing is that there is a constant ethereal laughing of an invisible hag that is stalking the area.
Yeah.
That you can run into. You can also you eventually learn that in this place, there's a superstition that if you talk about her too much, it summons her.
Yep.
Which you can make happen by bringing her up every time that there's a way to do it. You can summon her early.
Yep.
It's very tormenty. Like
I love doing that. I did it and then I reloaded because I wanted to encounter her in her actual lair. Mm-hmm. You find like some survivors, some people who have managed to kind of keep their mind under this constant assault of this woman, you know, ranting and raving about her son and just complete nonsense. Omnipresent, like it's very loud. It actually started getting to me a little bit while I was mm-hmm. playing it. Like I turned down the volume so I wouldn't have to hear it. But like there's a room of survivors who are, you know, like they've got somebody with them called the Sleeper. When you talk to the leader, like, oh, I shouldn't say the hag's name. I forget what the hag's name is. And you can say it enough times to where she comes and the guy gets really pissed off and he attacks you.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, it's just kind of like there's lots of elementals and stuff you fight.
Yeah.
Like the combat dungeon part of this is pretty obnoxious.
Yeah. And it's also collect X number of things. You're trying to power up these devices that have air elementals inside of them. By like,
well, that's one way, because there's different ways to get through this.
Oh shit,
the articulation. So you can do that. You can go do all the things. I kept looking at this map and just was like, I don't want to fucking do this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I could do this, but I'd want to open up a map on another screen and just make a beeline to these, collect the three things. The other way to do it is if you find the Earth Elemental that the Dao was talking about, and kill the Earth Elemental, which is what he wanted to do. The Earth Elemental is holding up a portion of the structure, and it collapses the roof and changes the water levels to where it cuts off the sleeper. So I didn't end up doing the sleeper stuff. So you'll have to tell me about that, but it makes you be able to get to the hag.
Okay.
And it's kind of the shortcut. Like if you don't want, I appreciate a complicated, like quote unquote puzzle dungeon that recognizes the fact that not everybody's got time for this shit and will allow me just to be like, well, fuck this.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me use some brawn or, you know, just cut straight through the knot.
Yeah. Like, exactly. So it's a very Gordian knot kind of thing.
Yeah. The sleeper, like you really need to be rolling with one of many to do this, because it's not so much like, hey, you go in and examine the dream. It's more like you devour a soul to get something. Okay. It's very kind of counterintuitive. But those people, those survivors, just kind of end up being people who give you what you need to power up that stuff. Like one of the guys is a gnoll who is using one of the levers for the machine as kind of a quarter staff, and you have to give him a better weapon to replace it. Mm. It's a very basic kind of quest. But yeah, just it was a little bit of a bummer. Like it's already a big enough kind of area. It's easy enough to get like the elemental essences that you need to power up those machines, but they're also, you have to get blood from fresh corpses.
Okay.
And those are kind of scattered about. And it is difficult to remember where they were. And I ended up having to backtrack a lot in order to just hope I stumbled on them. Because the difference between a fresh corpse and just a regular corpse is not necessarily that well explained.
Yeah. It feels a little bit to me like a we needed to game this up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's never going to be something I respond really well to. Yeah, I feel like.
So this is a saggy middle, but it's probably the shortest saggy middle of one of these games that exists.
It is
a single dungeon that is kind of a bummer.
It's short and there's tons of cool shit in it. Like we're going to talk about some pretty cool stuff that comes soon.
Yeah.
You know. So you either way you get to the hag. You either power the three devices doing the chores, or you kill the gigantic Earth Elemental, which is kind of impressive just in its size too. Like it's a huge thing. And you unlock the hag, and the hag is not immediately aggressive.
No.
You know, you talk to the hag for a little while and learn about the hag and learn its background. And it turns out this is very important to the background of one of your companions, because this is Gan's mother.
Yes.
There's an element of just like, oh, I bet all hags just know each other. You know, like of course the hag that's a mother happens to be the mother of the hag that I, you know, hag son that I have hanging out, you know, but it is, it's still pretty cool because the story here is pretty great.
Yeah. So the reason that she is imprisoned, and again, I forget her name. The reason that she is imprisoned here is because she broke the rules of her coven. You know, she was once one of the, you know, aligned with those above, but she took a human lover, and that's how Hagspawn is created. Right.
Yes.
You know, like that, that's what happens, but there are dire punishments for, you know, both who were involved. So their fate was that she was forced to devour Gan's father in front of him, kind of piece by piece in the way that hags do. That's a wonderful line. Like we know how to eat them so that they stay alive the longest.
The cool detail about that, or the with the background of this, and some of this comes later when you talk to Gan and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the reason why Gan isn't a shithead.
Right.
And the reason why he's this beautiful creature is because it doesn't matter that his parentage is so corrupt and evil. It's that he was born from like true love.
Right.
And this making this sacrifice for true love is a thing that is going to be important later.
It sounds like we are like, so when we, you know, last episode, when we were saying themes, like we're kind of being funny about it, but like, it's really cool. Like it's foreshadowing a bunch of these elements and showing you a bunch of cases for like why these things are happening. You know, and in like different ways that these themes can articulate. It's pretty sophisticated for this kind of thing.
It's it does the thing where you don't notice it at the time, because I have no idea about, you know, the original betrayer and stuff and how kind of love played into that. It's the kind of thing where after I beat it, I think back and I'm like, oh, like, you know, that was a microcosm of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, they do it in the right order, you know, to build rather than kind of echo.
Yeah.
And it's very impressive. You know, it sounds, the way we're describing this sounds very over the top, I think.
Yeah.
When it's the fact that she devours him alive sounds very much like a Rob Zombie,
yeah,
you know, like House
yeah.
of a Thousand Corpses thing or something like that. But that's like hags eat people.
Yep, hags eat what they people. Do. And like the father was smiling the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, he accepted his fate.
Yeah, he knew the risk. Like the story is kind of hard to express how, but it articulates as sweet.
Yeah.
It doesn't articulate as House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah. And she only tells you this because your fight kind of shook her and she recognized what was happening. She has this moment of, you know, calm where she's able to express it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it ends up being like a very tragic character,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, super tragic hags, you know, mm-hmm. Obsidian, Torment, Avalon, like yeah. as yeah. a thing.
So this can articulate in a couple of ways. You can, you know, she gives you her eye, which ends up being a powerful item for you to use, I think, or it becomes a key somewhere else. I forget exactly what. And then locks herself away. Like, I'm losing my mind again. So you need to get as far away as possible so I don't hurt you again. And, you know, I decide to spare her, which gains me points with Gan because, you know, he doesn't want to see his mom die in front of him.
Well, Gan wants different. So forgive me if you know, because I beat this a while ago. I played this part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At the time of recording, like a couple weeks ago. The way I remember it is Gan being in favor of putting her out of her misery.
Yeah, I can't remember it being that way.
It might work both ways. Like he might be okay with either one, or it could be relational.
Okay.
You know, like yeah. he could, you know, because the companions have minor little, you know, they will react differently mm-hmm. depending on how you act.
Right, right.
But that was how I remember Gan encouraged, like me being, there's a very specific dialogue option where you can say, like, this is your call.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can give the choice to Gan.
Yeah, yeah.
What to do. And I remember this ending with me putting her out of her misery and that being mm-hmm. Gan being good with it.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think that there's a couple of different ways it can go. It might just be how you approach it. You mm-hmm. know, if you're just like die, death, you know, hideous creature, then like he's probably not down with it.
But right,
if
right.
you come at it from a place of sympathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's cool. Like it's malleable to the approach and like it's probably responding to the argument that you built up.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. Like that is what I want dialogue trees to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other way is to have one of many devour this hag and gain the ability to become a warlock.
Yeah. Yep. Which would be useful, you know, probably want a warlock more depending on your party build more than a thief.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But this is one of the powerful souls you can give. And you can you devour the hag yourself?
I think you can, but I don't know what item you get off of it.
Something that make a magical item, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, something that's not super great. Regardless, which you can go through here now, you go through a couple different areas and fight a couple minor fights to actually find the Slumbering Coven, which is another really cool visual set piece.
Yes.
You don't have to have like good graphics or like, you know, like particularly stylish graphics because like Neverwinter Nights 2 is not a pretty game engine
mm-hmm.
To have these kind of like cool, neat, arranged visual things. And the yeah. Slumbering Coven is definitely that.
Yeah. They're arranged in a circle on this raised kind of dais. And they're kind of floating in these columns of light with their arms crossed, kind of like they're, you know, at rest or dying or dead.
Yeah, like sleeping. You go up to them and this whole part is like real dreamy, weamy and kind of confusing.
You're going into like dreams within dreams. Like you go
yeah.
into the collective dream of the Slumbering Coven and then you're at like you're inside of the Veil Theater. And
yeah.
like that is the first of the dreams that you go into and you meet these three characters that are going to end up being very important later on. But this plays into an awesome kind of dream stereotype almost, or like a common dream, which is like you're backstage at the theater. Like, hey, you're about to go on. And you say, I don't even know my lines. Like, don't
yeah.
worry. Just whatever you say, there's no way you can mess this up. Like, am I naked too? And you go out and no matter what you say, the audience gets angry at you because you fucked it up. Like you're unprepared.
Yeah.
You didn't study for the test.
It's a real nightmare, like literal nightmare scenario. Like, you know, super, super clever.
Yeah.
I love this. And you're doing the play version of the Betrayer's Crusade,
mm-hmm.
which obviously has tons of plot importance.
Yeah. And the audience yeah. is made up of, you know, this undead person. Kind of a celestial and a dragon, and that
well,
is
and
very
a cat,
important
cat
as well.
Person.
Oh, cat
yeah,
person.
There's a weird. It's a menagerie.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are a couple of people who do end up being mm-hmm. kind of important.
So it's a big fight
here.
Again.
Yeah, big fight. The second one is this bard who is in I think the same. It's the inn from God. What's the name of the Ember?
Oh shit! Really?
Or Port Last? I think it's the Port Last Inn.
Oh, weird.
Which is weird. Or just like they reuse the layout. But mm-hmm. there's a bar in the Port Last Inn who is very funny. like, he's like talking about this game that he wants to play. He's like stuck in this weird loop. Mm-hmm. Where he you can say like, I already know the rules to the thing if you've already done the game, because you can mm-hmm. try it twice. And it doesn't, like, he'll always explain them to you. He says that only men can be there, and you can be like, well, I'm a woman. He's like, no, surely you're not. And like, yep, I'm a woman. You can go do this back and forth, like, nope, I'm definitely a lady. And he's like, well, no ladies can be here, therefore you cannot be a lady.
He describes the rules of the game, which is it's just Mastermind, right? And you say, hey, that's a game I've heard before. No, that's a game I made up. It couldn't be. You couldn't have heard of it before. Maybe you're mistaken.
And in this game, it's called Hells. I don't like Mastermind. Like, I can solve it if I get out a piece of paper and pencil and kind of visualize it. But I don't feel like it. Cool detail here is if you have so he bets you money. That's the only consequence. So if you lose this, you still win the encounter or whatever. But if you're if you have Gan with you, and if you have high enough influence with Gan, Gan will create dream money.
He will manifest dream money.
Yeah, for you to bet. So I did that. I didn't lose anything. I just lost and lost a bunch of Gan's fake money, you know, which is kind of great. And there's a part where that happens. You can be like, you can just make money, like, you know, exclamation point, question mark to Gan, like, in your.
But it cannot go into the real world, you idiot.
Which is pretty much how he responds. Like, yes. And, you know, it's very funny.
I play this. If you win three times, so satisfactorily finishing two of these, two of the three trials that are put in front of you, gives you the gets you an item that you can use, the Dream Dagger, which is very, very good, especially for a wizard type. I like Mastermind because I like drawing grids. So that was you know, this was a nice way to do it. Also, it's called Hells because you were trying to remember the names of the or, you know, the, instead of being colored pegs, it is the different layers of hell.
I don't, you know, as somebody who does not take notes typically when I play, I did not feel like getting out the piece of paper and pencil. But you, you know, regardless of which, you complete the encounter. The third one is a real wet fart. It's just a mind flayer in a maze being hunted by a gift.
Not that happy with it. You just have to, like, lead the mind flayer away from the gift, and then when you're done, there's another one, a wizard, but I decided not to do it. It's back there in the back, but at this point you had enough. Like, these are people who, you know, were kind of like caught in the dream themselves. There's one of the dreamscapes that you can go to where you're inside the vault, you know, again, the vault of the dead god. Aramon is standing there, and the red woman comes to fight him, and you kind of have like a miniature choice. Like, you're getting a little bit more context for these two figures that you know a little bit about. You've heard of Aramon before. The red woman is figured, and you've seen her in another dream. She looks exactly like Sophia, and they're kind of making their cases to each other about, like, which one should live and which one should die. At this point, I had sympathy for Aramon because I didn't know the full story, and his case was like, I was just trying to protect my brother.
And I was trying to stay neutral, which you can do with a check. But it is it's not easy necessarily to do so. So you do that, get some more background. The kind of the centerpiece, you know, dream here, the important cool one, is going to this this wall of flesh thing here. this wall of petrified bodies.
So the wall of the faithless.
It's hugely important. This game. And we've heard mention of it, I believe. It's at the very least in the flavor books and stuff like that, which like in D&D based games, I don't tend to read those because they tend to just be like background stuff from splat books, on the Forgotten Realms. This game in Mask of the Betrayer, it's cool to do so.
And the wall of the faithless, like, is a thing. Like, it only appears in certain editions, I believe, but like, it's a fixture a little bit in the planar. And the planar cosmology, which is people who choose not to believe in a god, are kind of culled by the god of death, and then kind of their souls are placed here to kind of live in agony until the wall expands and petrifies them, and, you know, their souls are locked away forever.
No good. It's the D&D version of a purgatory in an extremely bad, tortury way. And here, kind of awesome, like, you're approaching this thing, this wall of you know, souls.
Also, it's outside the City of the Dead.
Like, which you can't go to yet, but we're, you know, it's Chekhov's City of the Dead. So you go there, and who's here but Bishop? Like, very weird. Like, I was not expecting literal characters to show up from the main campaign.
No, neither was I.
mostly just because it had been sold to me as like being totally unrelated constantly. But having that kind of relationship with Bishop, even though, you know, he's not very well articulated in Neverwinter Nights 2 base game, I think this is actually very cool.
Yeah.
You know,
And he also seems like the most likely person to have wound up here.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who, you know, he believes in nothing Lebowski. And so, you know, like he knows about it. Like, and he describes his death. Like, you can ask him plenty of questions. He says, the last thing I saw was bits of my own skull.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that he is still Bishop, you know, so he's being a huge, you know, dickhead. Yeah. Like, you talk to him and he's trying to put on a real brave face about this whole thing that's happening to him. Like, he's in a literal wall of souls being surrounded by people. And the way this is written is just like great, where, you know, he'll just be like, you know, this is, you know, I expected to be in, end up somewhere worse. This isn't so bad. And then there'll just be kind of a shudder in the wall and the other souls will start weeping. And it's like, you can see him being scared for just like a second, you know, his facade cracking. And it's like in 4 minutes, it is better characterization than anything in the base game.
Right.
It's, you know, like, you know, this is what they're trying to go for Bishop, and they just made him a sneering moron in the base game. And then here it is just like, man, this is like, oh, now I get his character. You know, like, it's all an act. Like, he's that kind of people, not, you know, and it's, it just comes across like really, really well, really, really economically.
Yeah. And like, he tries to hold this up. Like, he says, the people in the wall are infected with hope. Like, the worst thing here is that people think they can get out. And Bishop kind of relays a little piece of information here, which is a little bit inaccurate, but, you know, in some ways it gets to the idea of it, saying, hey, you are a mask for the God of the dead.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that there are these forces that will take on new faces. And we heard about that from Sheva, one of the witches in Mulsantir, earlier on, that the, you know, the gods take on masks and they have to kind of reconcile that with their current existence. And this causes Gan to say, hey, there's some game being played here by ancient rules, you know, with the unspoken corollary to that being, and we're the pieces. Like what we're seeing is incredibly important to what you are, and will figure in to, you know, what we need to become.
So
yep, it's great. I just taking a moment to revel in it is good, because that is a very powerful moment. I fucking hated Bishop in the main game, and having him show up here is exactly kind of what I needed for his arc. So this kind of culminates in a fight with some lower planes kind of creatures, and you have to kind of pry another mask fragment from Bishop's dead hands in the wall. Like, he says, hey, I've got something for you. There's a wonderful detail about this. So the souls and the bodies are kind of held in place by this mold like moss that kind of like hardens quickly. And so when the bodies shift, that is because the stuff that is holding them there is hardening. So it is a process of being assimilated into the wall. And so when Bishop finally dies, he's kind of like, it's when his face is pulled back into it.
Yeah. Right.
And so you're able to reach in and pull this out, you know, before it is kind of lost to you forever.
Yeah. Yep. And so you get your thing. You get this triggers you coming back.
Right.
To the, like, the actual real world.
Yes, yeah, so where
dream within dream ends.
where the slumbering coven actually slumbers.
And because you've killed these three, like, loci or whatever, the different, you've taken care of the three dreams, you can actually interact with them now.
Yes.
And talk to them. And this is a long, like, dialogue section.
Yeah, a lot of exposition here.
Yeah, the first of, like, I would say four that we're going to get in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gan, first of all, wants to confirm what happened to his father, because, you know, his mother was not in exactly a great way. And, you know, they confirm it. They say, hey, yes, you know, we did what we had to do based on the order that we serve. And so right away, Gan's like, fuck these people. He wants them to suffer the same fate.
So they give you a bunch of exposition here, kind of telling you a little bit about, essentially, like, Liana and Sophia and her mom.
Right.
You know, and kind of their thing. They say that, you know, the white twin was Liana and the red twin was Nephrys. Is this the first time we've heard Nephrys?
Yes.
Nephrys. Yeah. So that's the name. Yeah. So this is the Red Tomb is Nephrus. They wanted to end the hunger of the Spirit Eater.
Mm-hmm.
And they visited the coven, and they brought dreams to trade for this power.
Yes. If you have Sophia here with you, she says, wait, Nephrus is my mom.
Yeah. This is where we learn that she's only referred to her as her mother this whole time.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, there are twins in place. Shit. And that's, again, that's very hackneyed, but that's not really what's going on.
Right. They also refer to you as the Tempest of Dreams, and they reveal another important piece of information. All these dreams that we've been kind of going into, both this one here previously and in the previous episode, where we've met the boy, we've met the woman in red, all of these have been my own, even though it's not a life that I lived.
Yes. Right.
So there is this duality again, themes.
Yes. Because spoiler, like, you're the mask of the, you are the mask.
Yes. So the mask of the betrayer,
Betrayer is riding you like a coat.
Right. Yeah. Or you are riding the betrayer like a coat. Yeah. It's, so the mask is not a literal mask until the very, very end. Like, you know, you are the face that this betrayer, this Akachi, is wearing, you know, and the only form that he can take, because he exists as nothing but emptiness.
Yes. Right.
And so last episode we mentioned Merkel, not Ben Merkel, the delightful friend who hosts the level with us.
Who? What a dark god are you going to get to replace Merkel when he leaves the level?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of who could be Kelimvor. The problem is Kolimvor is the only way that could go. So I would have to become twice as powerful to take up the second slot.
That's true. Power grab. Pretty here first.
Yeah. But Merkel has died, and we talked about that last episode. He was usurped by Casimir and then Kelimvor. But his corpse still dreams on the astral plane. Yep, sign me up.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then we learn, you know, people who don't believe in this god of death.
Or in any gods, rather. I mean,
any gods, yeah. 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 Fall into this domain in the wall, which we knew a little bit of before, but we get a little bit of additional background on that.
Yeah.
you can ask out your old companions. They know a little bit about that. You know, they say, like, one of your old companions wanders, broken, severed, sort of get this reforged and stored away, which you need to get further in.
Yeah. Yeah. They reveal that, like, hey, that is the key to the interior of the vault that you've seen. And you have a choice here. You can decide to, you know, either kill or spare the hags or devour them. You have the usual kind of retinue of options. I can't say exactly why I decided to spare them.
Mm.
What did you do?
No, I took them out.
Okay.
They make the argument. They say, like, we have all this collected knowledge,
mm-hmm.
That you would be destroying, you know, if you kill us. But yeah. I was just trying to get into Gan's pants. In order to get that flopter copter, I'll do anything. And the so I decided to murder them. And it's a hard fight because it is 12 really high powered mages.
Yeah.
Or however many there are, nine. Yeah. However many there are right all at once.
Yeah. If you devour five of them, I think, you can get an amazingly powerful mask. I believe is what one fact that I read said. My head equipment was just the mask that I found in the back of the theater, like that high charisma one. So I was already like, I was like 100 with Gan or something like that. So you take a massive hit. It's like 36 influence that you lose with him if you let the coven live. But like, yeah, I saw them as kind of a fixture in this area. More than anything, and just at this point I didn't see the need for revenge, because the deed was already done, you know.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, you don't do revenge when the deed hasn't been done,
right?
there's no prevenge.
I suppose. Yeah. Like, I didn't see the good that it would do.
Yeah revenge is a bad motivator.
Yeah.
You know, in general. But the you know, again, they seem pretty shitty. I didn't feel bad killing them either.
Yeah.
The difference is, if you do kill them, it makes all their guards, when you walk out the front door and see all the, like, you know, vampires and weird shit out there. The vampires and supplicants are not hostile, but you fight a lot of guards on the way out.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
It just ends up being like, it's not hard. It just kind of ends up being pretty tedious.
Yeah.
You know, but you eventually make your way out, and I found my Dao buddy and is like, yeah, I killed that earth elemental. He gave me a magic item I threw away.
Yeah. I didn't kill the earth elemental. So I had to pass a check to make sure he didn't attack me.
Like, oh yeah. I didn't realize you could end up fighting the Dao.
Yeah, like he'll get pissed off because he gave you the key, which only give me half the key. You know, you only accept half the payment before the job's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a little side bit here with Gan that I did not do. Because I forgot to go back once I had the dream ability.
So throughout this, somewhere in this slumbering coven area, you have gained the ability to walk into dreams yourself, either by dealing with Gan's mom or by dealing with the slumbering coven themselves. And so you can go back. You remember when we talked about the Wells of LaRue prior to this, we talked about Anya, the young farm girl who is kind of caught in a dream of Gan. And we find out by talking with her that it is not Gan himself who has kind of come in. Gan did stay here, you know, when he was passing through, but she developed a crush on him. And so her desire for him, that's kind of creepy. I don't want to say it like that. Her crush on him was so strong that she actually kind of created this manifestation of Gan himself, of Gan herself. And this Gan is kind of not so much keeping her hostage, but she's like retreated into this and is, you know, in her own dream world, staying with him. You know, he is not Gan. He is Sir Ganayev. You know, so you have to combine your powers with Gan's to walk into this place and kind of convince her like, hey, you know, this idealized version of me, you know, of Gan is acting as this wedge between you and the waking world. And Gan adds on top of that, like, yes, and also he has this fake Gan has terrible fashion sense, and you got my nose all wrong.
Yeah, that's very good. I read about that part.
And so, you know, like I tried this a couple of different ways. No check would actually help me avoid a fight here. The best you can do. So there are two ways this can go. You can either just fight Sir Ganayev, and he's very difficult, kind of mirror version of Gan. Except he focuses more on melee stuff. Or if you really fuck up, you fight both Ganayev and Anya, who in her dream version turns into a dragon to defend Sir Ganayev.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of cute. Like there's like a weird little like courtly love.
Yeah.
You know, her turning into these kind of tropes, these fantasy, you know.
Yeah, it's super charming. The way that it goes. And also Ganayev turns really, really tall. But if you pass the diplomacy check, I guess I lied earlier because I wasn't reading my notes. I went through several different versions of this. If you pass the diplomacy check, you can have Gan try to win a contest of words for her love.
Oh, and that's pretty good.
And so instead of turning into a fight, it actually turns into like, hey, he's not real. I am, you know, like that, like just the somebody who really loved you wouldn't keep you held away from the world inside this dream, inside your house. They would want to parade you for everybody to see. They would want you to have will. Like, it's very sweet. And, you know, it's not like Gan, you know, like this is Gan breaking his thirstiness, right? Like he wants to save her. And this is very genuine. And when they come out of this, when Ganayev, you know, fades out of existence because she gives up this idealized version, he comes out and says like, hey, you know, you now have this ability too to go into dreams. You know, our paths might cross in the future, and like there is respect as equals among them as they go about this. It's super good.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very cool. I'm a little bummer that I missed it. I read about it a little bit, but this game doesn't have tons of stuff about it in general online, which is kind of weird. There's some let's plays and everything, but there's not huge breakdowns of it.
Yeah, you can't see the full tree, kind of.
Yeah. I went to so. You actually learn the critical path is you learn about going now that we know who Sophia's mom is and where she's at. We can use that fourth gate in the Shadow Vale to warp to the Red Wizard Academy.
Yes. And this begins chapter 3, which is going into the heart of Fae to kind of encounter and confront the Red Wizard Academy and the forces that kind of usurped it. This Aramon. What's that?
Are you sure this is the beginning of Act 3? I think this is still Act 2.
No, it's Act 3.
Act 2 is very... Are you sure? I thought Act 2 ended with the Merkel thing.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. Like, and just, yeah.
Act 2 is really long.
Act 2 is incredibly long.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we said, it's a harder soft middle than a lot of games, but it is the soft middle.
Yeah.
And this is actually all great.
Yeah.
So you head to... this is where I thought the act would end.
Yeah,
100%. I was like,
because you're leaving Molson Tier and going to a whole new place.
Yeah, but yeah, there's another climax that it actually ends on instead of the hag climax.
Yeah,
So you fight a bunch of guards, blah, 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 bloop, just do some fighting to head to the academy, which I was expecting just to be a dumb dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and it's not.
It's a big building full of wizards. What else could it be?
And as soon as you get in there, there are corpses on the ground. And like Sophia's like, there's signs of struggle. Duh. You know,
there's signs of murder, Sophia.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not. Come on. Struggle. There's signs of the alt-right here. come on, Sophia. So I was expecting it just to be a dungeon, but Red Wizards, because they're cold motherfuckers, just keep going.
Yeah.
Like there was this coup that happened that we learn about, but its classes are still happening.
Yeah. And the classes are just as fucked up as the corpses that are laying in the hallways.
So we find out Nephrys is dead. They tell us.
Yeah, they confirm this. You know, like originally this was something that somebody said. It seemed like they were trying to get under Sophia's skin. No, it's true. Nephrys is out of the picture.
Yep. And Ahriman, who had come here, is trying to find the founder of the Red Wizard Academy and kill the founder.
Right.
So it's deep in the school. You have to get in there and kind of do this investigation in order to get. To find where to go to chase Ahriman.
Yeah.
Catch him and get your answers.
You're given the name of a handful of professors who may be sympathetic for you. But ultimately you end up having to talk to everybody. Like nobody's going to outright attack you aside from some nameless wizards who are kind of like hiding away in the supplies closet.
Yeah. They say that some people are still going to be loyal to you and your mother. And you have Sophia here with you, which you should definitely bring Sophia here with you.
Oh yeah.
And it's like you were a teacher here, so that's not going to work for everyone, but it's like everyone doesn't immediately want to kill you.
Yeah.
In a lesser game, that's what this would be. Mm-hmm. Instead, there's a bunch of kind of cool puzzles and stuff we do.
Yeah. Little scenes and vignettes. They just pack this so dense.
It's very learning these different classes, learning these different teachers. So we meet Anaris here. Yeah. who is teaching about how to extract souls from things.
Yep. Like, hey, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Yep. So we step in like and you know, like he's not angry that you interrupted his class. He's like, oh well, let's do a demonstration. And he brings up the lowest performing student and says, devour the student's soul to demonstrate to the class how it's really done.
It's ridiculous. Like, that's amazing. So you can do that, obviously, or not.
Yeah, I have him summon an elemental that I can devour. Yeah,
so you can say no, but if you're being a shithead, that's an amazing thing you can do.
That's so good. Artesh is using the golem lag for cockfighting.
Yeah.
Because the actual conjuration professor died in the coup, and so they're using the facilities to run gambling.
Yeah, to gamble golem fights, which you can then enter. Like, you can find all these parts, which is so good. Like, you can, it's just for money, which, again, you definitively do not need. But you can put together your own golem, find custom parts, name him, and then send him into these cockfights to fight a progressive series of tough golems. I love it.
It's so good. Something that's a little bit of a bummer. So Selkit is somebody who's working on this kind of impossible goodwill hunting problem that Nefret had.
Oh, this sucks.
Yeah, this is bad.
I cheated my way through that. There's a way to do the easy way out of this that does not give you as much experience, but whatever.
Okay. I'd like to hear the easy way because I did the hard way. It's like, it puts forward this kind of game theory like thing. It's not like game theory at all. I'm sorry. We've been recording for a very long time, which is okay. So Mephits are inherently chaotic. If you have two types of Mephits, they will immediately kind of go into this entropic distribution. And Nefert had come up with a way to separate them again, basically to unscramble the egg, having to do with kind of these two rooms and this door that you could operate at the center.
And the idea being that if you could take this principle, how to do this, and apply it to unscrambling like souls.
Right, right. It's like, hey, well, we will harness the impossibility of solving this task to fuse these souls that we have here back together. Yes. Again, themes, reversing these one way processes.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, so good. The way it articulates, though, is a bunch of fire methods and a bunch of ice methods in two rooms with a gate between them. And you have a lever that opens the gate. And whenever you open the gate, the mephits closest to the door on either side switch places. Mm-hmm. And it is a patience contest to get only ice mephits in one room and only fire mephits in another.
Yeah.
Which I could not be bothered with.
There's a trick to it. Like, if you know, on the side that you're on, you can talk to the Mephit that you want to stay near the door, and then just keep on talking to him until he until the one you want to switch him with is near the door. But you just have to wait for the other one. So that just I don't know. So you're waiting for one set rather than two. Yeah, yeah. So you're waiting for one Mephit rather than two. I don't know how that reduces the amount of time. I was about to say by half, but that probably isn't accurate. But you're just going to get into the situation where the Mephit that you want to switch is just over here in a corner bouncing around because of the AI path.
Yeah. Yeah. The kind of, and keep in mind that this is the second time there's been a solution like this in the game and how cool this is. Mm-hmm. The Gordian knot method of doing this is I noticed, that the, there's these weird little pylons in the room that don't do anything. And if you, attack them, they misfire and they start killing Mephits. And once you kill Mephits, you can just pick them up and carry them into the thing.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
It's, you know, again, Gordian knot, you know, like just like, how do I avoid this like thing and just do the, you know, different way through it.
That's like Kobayashi Maru.
It was awesome. Like I was like, oh, there's no way I can actually do this. Right.
Yeah. You're
like, I thought
you're and I was being willing, a nerd.
I was expecting to get a non, I was expecting for it to just to fail the quest.
Right, right.
You know, and that's the impressiveness of this game where like, I was like, oh, I'm just going to kill them all. I'm going to go back to the professor and be like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, and he's going to be pissed. And then maybe I fight him.
He summons, you know, summons more Nephit or Mephits and says, do it right again. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I was expecting. Instead, like you go through and it works and it's like, oh shit. You know, like this is a way to do it. You get less experience points for doing it that way, but it still solves the problem.
Yeah, no, I was sitting here. I was very pissed off.
it's pretty excruciating. Like it shouldn't have been.
Right, right.
So
yeah. There's another teacher, Master Poriset, who is somebody who again is working on these soul infusions and soul fusions and separations. And in order to do his job better, because he has to deal with these forges and stuff, he has transposed his own soul into a clay golem. He has given up his entire body in order to that is red wizard as fuck.
Yeah, to make him fireproof essentially.
Yeah. So we're gonna come back to him later, but eventually we can go through to Nephrus's study and find this door that in a Resident Evil like fashion has these four insets, and we need four soul items to actually accomplish this and open this, because that is what we need to get to.
Yes. So we're going to be solving these puzzles going back and forth between this main area with these players we already met and the staff quarters.
Right.
One of the soul things we get through this mirror puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which this is almost like, I don't like these very much.
No, rotate
the mirror things. This one is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual puzzle parts of it, I think, are clever.
Yeah. So well, like, you just have to realize if the path isn't clear, you clear it. So you just.
Yeah.
Just well, burst the hole through the wall.
Yeah, you have to attack a bookshelf to make it through. They give you a little item that allows you to like turn on the sun with you. Like you can take the thing that starts the beam.
Yep.
So you can do kind of on the fly prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that this thing does is it's a crystal. You make the light go to another crystal. Anything you put inside one crystal, its soul gets like sent to the other one.
Yeah, it's like mirrored, but it shows the true version of it.
It shows a true mirror. So there's cool things that happen here.
Mm-hmm.
The way to actually get the soul is you send yourself through, and then you go through and you do a fight.
Yeah.
And stuff. If you send the one of many through it, it splinters into like a dozen, like shadows.
It's just like standing there. Yeah.
That's really great.
Yeah.
So there's like different kind of things that can happen.
Yeah. Kaylin appears there, with black wings.
Yeah.
I forget what happens with Sophia. And I think Gan shows up as like a more traditional hagspawn kind of looking person.
It's Sophia might not go through. I think Sophia doesn't show a thing or something like that.
Oh, that's
cool. That's foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Super fucking cool. Like for being like a shitty, like I don't like those puzzles, but like,
yeah, just like a, cool like, a do like a boilerplate, like, yeah, a boilerplate puzzle. So good.
Yeah. Very good.
You go to a ward for the soulless. Which is like, it's just a clinic. It's a barracks for people who've had their souls removed. And you meet Bebtu, who has kind of been entrusted with something for Sophia. But in order to get what he has, like what has been put in place of his soul, we need to get his original soul from the depository. And that's something downstairs that we didn't quite address. But they have a library of souls within these orbs that you can examine to get these cool little short stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also in this room is our good old friend, the buddy, Amanjiro.
Yeah. Amanjiro's back. He's sleeping.
You can try and pass a heal check, but it's really, really high. But
and then that just gives you some information. That doesn't fix him.
Okay.
You can't put his soul back in him with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Enough Band-Aids do not cost you the soul?
Yeah, medically, some herbs.
I'm sorry. She died because she lost the will to live. You're a robot. Yes. Why do you know that?
There's another guy in here as well, who you talk to in the word for the soulless.
Oh.
You have to talk to him. You have to get his original soul from the depository, which we mentioned.
Yeah, it's
about to. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He will talk about Anna Manjaro after you talk to Anna Manjaro as well.
Okay.
And kind of point you in the right direction for solving that puzzle if you want to get Anna Manjaro's soul, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So there's like two demons in one of the rooms. They're held in these circles, or two devils, like, you know, specifically like, or the lawful version.
Yeah, yeah. I always mix them up.
Yeah. And, they are bargainers, and they have Amanjiro's soul and do not want to give it back.
Yeah, and this is the first kind of inkling that something bad is going on here, because they're separating people from their souls and they need to go somewhere. So they have like gathered emissaries from the lower planes in order to bargain, and kind of like this is where they end up going. They get stuff in return for helping to conscript people for, you know, the latest iteration of the Blood War.
Yeah. Which, you know, again, Blood War. Generally on board for that.
Yeah, so they're Thal'Ka and Oronok. They're bickering, and they're just they both try and cut each other off at the knees, which is pretty great. So to get Amanjiro, so you have to find their souls for them. Also on this floor in the staff quarters, because Sophia is a teacher, you find her room, which I always love going to somebody's room. In a video game, also in real life, it's cool to see where people live. But Sophia's room is messy, and there are a whole bunch of golems and homunculi either broken and laying around or walking around of their own volition and kind of like chittering and chattering. It's almost a little bit like RJ Sebastian's place in Blade Runner.
They're my friends. Yeah. I made them
home again. Jiggity jig.
Okay, so where are we? The way you get souls for Amanjiro's soul, has a lot to do with going to the soul depository thing where you can check out the souls from the library.
Yeah, yeah.
And then getting kind of scripts that allow you to check out more souls.
Right.
Essentially. So like doing certain things, people will give you these permission slips.
Right. You try and take more souls than you're allowed, there's a hilarious thing where you're attacked by every single element, and then you're polymorphed into a chicken.
Yeah. Yep. Very, very funny. And then nothing ever happens. You just can't take out the soul.
Right, right.
You know, you can't tank it. They want you to go through the actual puzzles.
Yeah. So you get Amanjiro's soul by running this bargain. And you talk to him, and this is the most complete version of the story that we've gotten about our, you know, prior companions, right? Kelgar got away, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Nishka got away. Like, he's recounting the final moments. Cassavir died holding up a collapsing doorway. Grobnar died trying to protect the Blade Golem. Like, all these people, like, it's, you know, just like, yeah, this is the last thing that we knew. And the reason Amanjiro is here is because, you know, he followed the people who abducted you from the, you know, through the Shadow Realm, you know, in order to follow here. And the reason Kelgar isn't here is because he got outsmarted. But like, that is for the good, because Kelgar would have been eaten alive.
Yeah. Yep, yep. So pretty cool to get that closure. Amanjiro will also join you here, and he becomes kind of just like a doesn't count towards your limit party companion.
Right, right. You can't control him directly, but, you know, he's Amanjiro. He will fight for you and cast very good spells.
Which is kind of cool, because he's an evil guy. But you can say, like, you know, the way you convince him is to have like this purpose again. And he talks about how after, you know, once he figured everything out, like,
with the King of Shadows,
with the King of Shadows, like, that was his all-consuming purpose for his entire life.
Yeah,
you know, again, this Mask of the Betrayer making the NPCs from Neverwinter Nights 2 better in retrospect.
Right.
You know, like, explaining them in 3 minutes better than the entire game did.
Yeah, better than before. Better than the 50 hours.
Yeah. So super, you know, super, super cool.
Yeah.
To get the kind of final part of this, and I think it's the final part. This part gets a little blurry to me. There's a lot of like moving around.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts here, especially with the soul depository. Like,
yeah, I think the soul depository is a cool idea that's mildly tedious.
Yeah,
there's a part where this puzzle just mechanically lets me down. Like, it's a cool idea, mm-hmm. Where the devil will say, like, hey, we want a fused soul of two people.
Yeah.
But you know, let's say they've got to be, it's got to be all these things, and they give you four different contradictory qualities.
Right. This has to be good and evil, rich and poor.
Yes. And so, you know, it's up to you how much you've been paying attention to the soul arts that are going on here mm-hmm. to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
And so, which is good. It's kind of neat the way it articulates, like what you actually have to do. The puzzle part of it is cool.
Yeah.
The mechanics involve a lot of moving around in the Neverwinter Night 2 engine.
Yeah. Which is a bit of a bummer. It's unnecessary friction. So the puzzle is to go down to the soul depository and kind of read the biographies of these souls that they have here in order to find the two that best match the criteria. And so mm-hmm. you're kind of doing an end run around the explicit rules of the devils, which is how you deal with devils, you know.
Yeah.
You
outsmart them at their own game, you know, essentially.
Yeah And
the reading the biographies involves like taking the souls, putting them in your inventory, sticking them in like a box, and then clicking on the box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not like this would have, they could have given you an ability to do this or something.
Yeah.
You know, or like an item in your inventory, so you could just right click on the soul and read it right away.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Mm-hmm. I would have appreciated.
Yeah. It's a little fiddly. Also, fusing them is fiddly. So you have to go to our clay golem friend. Porzet, and ask him to do this for you. It'll be an incomplete fusion, but, you know, it'll be enough. And the flagging on this is a little bit weird. So many flags that you have to do. Like, it was very difficult to get him to offer to do this for me. But just because mm-hmm. maybe it was just a weird order that I did things. Like, I felt like I was kind of in a bugged version of this. But, you know,
yeah,
might have been my fault.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah.
You know, which is generally good. But eventually you get that. That ends up being the final one, which allows you to go into the final area
mm-hmm.
here. The Mark Soul.
And this ends up being kind of the first of many confrontations that we're going to have with Ahriman, who, mm-hmm. you know, is the boy from the dreams. He mm-hmm. is Arrakesh's younger brother, which that's kind of weird. That wasn't that centuries ago. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out about that. You know, he has rallied some of the folks from the Red, you know, the Red Wizard Academy against you. And you can talk some of them out of the fight. Like, they won't join you, but they will walk away. And this is just a cool wizard battle inside of mm-hmm. an abandoned room.
Yep. You fight those wizards. Mm-hmm. And then you hand it here. You've got, so you can talk to kind of your buddies and your friends will always talk to about each other. I mentioned in the last episode, asking them to comment on one of many.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, you can say like, what do you think of this person? Mm-hmm. And they will kind of give that, you know, let you know. And that's been something that, Obsidian and BioWare has kind of continued forward.
Yeah.
Which is really great.
Yeah, playing this just makes me want to play a Coder 2.
Mm. No.
But I also want to play Tyranny. I also want to play a lot of games.
Games are good.
Games are good. So there are two things here. I've been very bad about talking to my companions, admittedly. So I talked to Gan, and you know, something that happened here is, you know, since we went to the Slumbering Coven, you know, he feels lost for his mother. Like, it's the first real genuine emotion he has felt aside from, you know, just kind of like professional duty to being, you know, a Dreamtime Poon miner. You know, he vows kind of to be more open to people, right? And to kind of just avoid this similar tragedy to what befell these people who were beholden to more rules. So in a way, he solidifies more into what he was. But in another way, like, he opens up more and says, like, yeah, I'm going to try and be a different and better person.
Yeah, around this time, I'm not exactly sure when it is, but at some point, Gan and I fall in love and we get our feet for being in love, which is this, like, some kind of the way it articulates is something like, and it might be around here, where if we're near each other, like we're like we regenerate or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it is.
Yeah,
but there's like they'll do a heart to heart things, and my characters like officially join, and like the game ends with me getting married to Gan.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, there's a wedding there and like all about getting that fucking schlong. And it just worked out for me in the best possible way. I've been talking to them the whole time. What kind of happens that's kind of frustrating is like Aku definitely dries up at some point. Mm-hmm. And Sophia doesn't dry up, but this whole part is about Sophia.
Yeah.
So I'm like learning about that. And I'm getting her commentary. Kaylin still has interesting things, but this is kind of like, not Kaylin's part of the story. Like, she's kind of out of all the companions, like Gan comes with you because he's, you know, your Amzadi or whatever. And then Kaelin is really important to the end game and kind of this thing, but she doesn't know exactly why she's important yet.
Right.
In this weird way. So like she has a kind of a weird place in this mid part.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. She's kind of sitting there with nothing to do besides help you accomplish the immediate goals.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, she's like, you know, her crusade is yours in a lot of ways. And you can talk to her about kind of the cosmology and, you know, she's fallen from grace a little bit because she was once serving, you know, the current god of the dead, Kelimvor, but, you know, switched over to Illimater, this god of martyrs, because, you know, she realized that being a Doombringer was not as good as it sounded.
Yes. Well, I like it, except for the part where you do all the bringing of doom.
Right.
You know? Like, what can I bring something else?
Yeah,
like
the
like
perks are fine.
Fresca?
Yeah. Can I bring some edible arrangements?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I bring some Sherry's berries? I'd rather... You know, I'm sick of bringing all this doom.
Yeah. And, you know, a way you can score a lot of points with her is to have her, you know, react to the presence of this wall of the faithless and, you know, say like, yeah, that's fucked.
Yeah. That's like, she's a single issue voter and that's like really a big part of her thing.
Yeah.
Like, that wall has to come down. Like, this is not okay.
Yeah. There's a funny thing. If you talk to her with Gan and your, in your party, you know, say like, oh, just you know, to tell me about your heritage, like those wings, I can't help but notice you have wings. And the conversation turns to her eyes. Right. And Gan says, oh, they're mirror like, so I can see myself in them, you know? And then that's what makes me again, just, oh, classic Gan.
Oh, Gan.
But again, but again, she provides this very accurate appraisal. You throw out words like a wind around you, you know, and, you know, gives this other detail, not about Gam, but says like, oh, you know, because of my heritage, I see no color. It is all black and white. And, you know, kind of importantly, she says, I don't feel like anything is lost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, and that's a morality that, you know, echoes her morality as well.
Yeah.
So after you defeat Ahriman here, you move forward into the astral plane.
Yeah.
You know, through like a portal or something, I believe.
You step through the door you unlocked with all those souls.
Yeah, yeah. And this leads you onto the astral plane, and this is fucking amazing.
Yeah, this justifies the 80 hours that I spent with this series.
Yeah. Like this is very, very good indeed. Yeah. You come out, there are some Knights of the Undying Dragon here who are just like, they're here to greet you. They're not hostile. They're just like, we're here to kind of keep watch, kind of vigil over our dead god.
Yeah.
Which is a gigantic skeleton that you walk up its spine to talk to its skull.
Yep. Its skull is at the very top of this floating rock on the astral plane. And so for all the shit that I talked about the astral plane, this is the exception. Because
there's good things in the astral plane.
Yeah, I know. being extreme is funny. But so you walk up and, you know, you have to, you know, he was a god. He was gigantic. You have to get very close to his essence, which is contained in his skull, to, you know, kind of talk to him, you know, like, why is he alive after all of these centuries? We're going to find out. But he, you know, kind of offers this little thesis saying like, hey, you are the irony that walks. You are two fates bound together and fractured. And Merkel, like any god of death ought to, has a real boner. Lol. for irony, right?
Yeah. And this is a huge exposition dump.
Yeah,
like he does, he talks forever, he addresses all of your companions and kind of dresses them down.
Yeah,
except for Oku, who's like, hello, I think, yeah. I'm still here. Oh, excuse me, I was over here at the vegetable dip in the corner, like, you know.
You guys tried this hummus?
Yeah, it's good. I think it might be edamame hummus rather than the regular kind. She looks at your companions. She looks at Kaelin first and calls out her kind of hypocrisy and the irony that she was serving Kelimvor and, you know, leaning people to the wall, you know, and you will know that the planes turn and justice does not drive them.
Right.
Like you know, your entire I'm the Joker from Batman, right. You know, Dark Knight Rises or whatever. And your whole morality system is a joke.
Right.
And she is resolute. And you back her up and you get, you know, kind of favor gains.
Yeah.
If you're like, yeah, no, we're going to take down this fucking wall. It doesn't matter what this dumb dead skeleton says.
Yeah. It doesn't matter that he built it. Like he's dead and out and irrelevant.
Yeah. Then calls everything out, that's built can fall, you know?
He then calls out Gan for believing in no God, for, you know, kind of following spirits, right? Kind of having this animistic belief, you know, it, all in spite of seeing his corpse, in spite of seeing the evidence of the gods around them. And Gan says, well, you know what? That doesn't really persuade me. And you can support him again. And again, get favor points. Like, yeah, no dice here. You're not going to find any water in this well, son.
Yeah. And it's very like, this would have been, I'm happy with how this worked. It just ended up being a choice. This would have been a very cool echo of the end of Neverwinter Nights 2. If the way that like your companions could be shaken based on how well you had backed them up until this point, you know, so like if you have been backing up Kaelin or if you've been planting seeds of doubt, this could be the final thing that knocks her over, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Not for Kaelin, because Kaelin can't, like, that's Kaelin's point. Like, she cannot do a fault. Like, spoiler, there's no good ending for Kaelin.
Right.
Kaelin is the only character who does not end up okay, no matter what. But Gan, you know, if you had been like saying like, yeah, maybe there's a God over and over and over, this like would change him and he'd change classes or something. Yeah. Like, there'd be
Well, that happens in one of his endings too. Like, he converts for you.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I know. I married him. He's my husbando. You know, like he's my anime wall scroll husbando. So I know. But Sophia, he says, he's like, you have been here before, you know, and you owe me quite a bit, because you are the betrayer's beloved. Sophia's like, no, my God, I'm Sophia. But again, and you can back her up or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but which one? Like, you're both kind of swept up in the tide of this, and this is the thing that kind of rings the most true based on what we have heard from everybody. Like, there have been multiple people who have said this isn't the first time that we've seen either the Shardbearer or Sophia.
Yeah.
You know?
And one of them, it's because of, again, this presence. But for Sophia, it's kind of literal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Which we'll get to very soon.
Yeah. So then this introduces the idea, like, you can question, like, hey, why are you still alive? You know, you've fallen out of relevance. Nobody believes in you. He says, hey, a god does not easily die. He lives in the fears of him and lingers on in the doubts that he is truly gone. And related to that, like, you know, being, you know, because of that, he has introduced this spirit eater curse as a way to kind of sow this superstition and get this drip feed of belief to prolong his life.
Yes. And he did it for that reason. He also did it because it is an ironic punishment.
Oh, of course.
For Akashi, you know, like, who we'll get the more details about that very soon. But this was an ironic punishment that also happened to have the side effect of like keeping him alive.
Yeah.
You know, and that's you. Like, you're doing it. And the fact that people are concerned with you, and that even the fact that you're even on this quest.
Right.
So the fact that you are concerned with finding out who laid this curse, that curiosity keeps him alive.
Hey, Gary, belief is power. Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, it's yeah, it's very, very tormenting in a really, really excellent way.
Yeah. And so, like, this betrayer, this force, you know, Akashi, you know, we've learned he steals what he's lost. You know, he takes a body, a face, and a name, you know, like, I'm nothing but a mask that is obscuring very slightly this unyielding hunger.
Yeah.
You know, and we learn the original sin that kind of caused this, right? Akashi raised this army, you know, to go against the city of justice, to go against his very own God, you know, and just like this, the only thing that could lead to this cruelty to others, to a God, to yourself, Gary, is love.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you know, he did it, you know, for love. That's the only reason that could have motivated him.
Right. That is, and the only thing that could turn somebody against their God.
Yeah. And we don't know we're going to learn the particulars of that, like, presently, like, very soon. So, you know, again, we know this betrayer's crusade, what he's done going against the gods. He says, you know, we can ask about Ahriman here. Like, what's his whole thing? And he's like, you know, essentially like his, like a dog,
right?
You know, like his loyal dog who will chase down his agent. I've made him hostage to make sure he'll never age, and he will always be this thing that kind of harries you.
Yeah, he will be the thing that enables the spirit eater to enable Akashi, you know, to still live. So when I said before that I spared Ahriman because he was just trying to protect his brother, again, this is a small ironic twist on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it should be noted that even if you do fight Aramon, like, I don't think I got that. I think I failed a check to try to be neutral, which I think I mentioned before. He comes back anyway. If you kill him because of this binding, the soul hostage, Aramon appears again.
I think I fought Aramon like 5 times in this game.
Yeah. He's a perpetual guy. And there's kind of shades of it being, you know, the same way that you thought Almanjaro was the boss of Neverwinter Nights 2.
You
keep running into him. Like, you know, Aramon's not the end boss. Like, he's not the antagonist.
And he's pretty much always a pushover, too.
That's true, too. Yeah. I mean, almost everything's a pushover. Like, high-level D&D is weird and was never meant to happen.
Right.
Like, you know, those epic player character books, it's like...
Yeah, it's like, what if you could fight a god? Like, okay, what then?
Yeah, and then what? You know, it's not where the cool stuff happens.
Right.
Generally.
Yeah. And so right now you have a choice, right? You've gotten the information that you need kind of from him, and you have to decide what you do with him. You know, this being that was once a deity that has lost relevance, that is sitting here, you know, in this liminal state between life and death, sustained only by belief in you. You know, if you succeed in banishing the Spirit Eater, then all of a sudden, you know, the countryside is no longer afraid of this thing that will come and erase them from existence. And so in a way it doesn't really matter here, but it's a way for you to make a statement, right? So you have the ability to, like, you can have one of many eat Merkel, right? If you have him along, you can have one of many devour him. And, you know, spoiler, the way one of many's quests ends, if you do that, is to, you know, like, Merkel possesses him and fights you. Like, hey, you've given me a body, so we're going to fight. And that's a little bit later. It's, you know, when you're running around trying to prepare for the final stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You can devour Merkel yourself and again, get the item that you need to craft an item. What I ended up doing, and Gary, I'd be curious to hear what you do, is I granted him eternal rest. You know, and again, I turned that irony back on him and I said, like, hey, you know, like, I've used this, and through my travels, I've, you know, learned what to do with the undead to ease their suffering. You have given me the ability to stop your reign and to give you peace, which is absolutely the last thing that you want, because you did it to one of your most loyal followers up until the end. and this was your contingency plan. So, you pulled the trigger on the gun that was pointed at your head. Lol. And so that is the way that I dealt with it. What'd you do?
No, I just ate him.
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, fuck this guy. Like, you know, he was being a shithead. And I was playing real hard on this. Somewhere along the line, I'd like either lost some favor or neglected to gain enough favor with Kaelin.
Okay.
And I wanted to see what would happen if I upped it. So I was kind of like doing things in order to try to juice that.
Yeah.
So in this whole conversation, real hard line against that wall. And I'm sympathetic to the anti-wall, you know, perspective.
Yes.
I don't like the wall.
No.
So I was trying to, you know, as the person who made it, I did that because I wanted to get a Kaelin boost, which I think you get.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's into putting this thing out of its, you know, not out of its misery, like obliterating it.
Yeah. Even though he isn't the person who is currently perpetuating the wall, he is the one who created it.
He's the creator of the wall. So I did it, you know, I did it for kind of gamey reasons to get Kaelin on my side so she can join my polyamorous triad with Gan. But the, also just, and then also like revenge.
Oh yeah.
You know, like you made this thing and it's you know, well, fucked
it's
me
like,
over.
It's like super petty. It's not only fucked you over, but like, if you're playing good, like it's fucked over untold numbers of people.
Yeah. It is. And then the wall itself, which is also like philosophically I'm not into.
Yeah.
You know, like as like, if that is the punishment for not believing in God in this world, like that's nope. Yeah.
Nope.
You know, I have to represent atheism in this game as well. So
if the gods are so insecure that that is what they have to do, then obviously something is wrong.
Exactly. So I had no problem eating them. Also, I didn't want to turn down the opportunity to eat this giant like skeleton thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no.
I was like, oh, I can eat the god of death. Like, that is not a video game verb that you get very often. And I was like, I want that, you know.
Hey, Gary, do you want to eat the world's rarest truffle? Don't mind if I do.
Exactly. So then you fight the Dragon Knights there. They turn on you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, you know.
the Dragon Knights or the Dragon Knights?
The
because you made it sound like a Pokemon.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Dragonites. Yeah, it's a this game gets very weird. It's very ambitious.
It goes off the rails.
Yeah, the when you think about it, Kellamore is just a Mimikyu of Merkel. Yeah. So anyway, so you do in this fight here, like, you know, at this point, like, I'm at that point in Obsidian games where it's like, stop making me fight anything. Like,
yeah.
Just turn this into a choose your own adventure because I'm really into this plot.
Mm-hmm.
But you do this little fight, you leave, and you go to this, you go through the Founder's Sanctum.
Yeah. Which here. Is the very deep basement very, underbelly of the, yes. of the Red Academy. Like Sophia says, whoa, I thought I knew every inch of this place.
Yeah. Cause it, you know, again, Ehriman was going for the Founder.
Yeah.
You know, at this point.
Right. And Ehriman, you know, is kind of leading this group of priests and paladins who are worshiping this dead god. Like, you know, Ehriman is kind of keeping the candle alive himself as well. Yeah. Saying, hey, you know, my fight has always been with the Red Woman from the very start. Right. Yep. So like he is not in this, like the spirit ear doesn't matter to him, you know, insofar as, you know, anything related to what's actually going on here. He just wants to stop this other force from, you know, usurping as god, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. And he also cares a little bit because of his brother, right. Obviously. When he says the fight has been with the Red Woman. So the Red Woman also shows up. Mm-hmm. she was faithless. She was somebody who did not believe in the gods.
Yeah.
And Akachi, this is what happened.
This is the original story. Sin. Like,
yeah, this is know, the story.
She died and was yep. sealed away into the wall.
Yes. And Akachi wanted to save her from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just like, this is somebody who I love. This wall is not okay.
Yep. I you know, it doesn't matter if I served it before. I now realize the price and now realize the toll that this takes. And so I'm willing to wage a war against everything that I was before and the god that I served. And, you know, in order to get her back, in order yes. to, you know, if not get her back, free her from this torment and from this oblivion,
this unjust,
yeah,
you know, torment. And there's an element of this whole thing that like plays into, in a weird way, you know, real life situations and modern politics and modern morality for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, this idea that like, to me, part of being, what I consider to be good is not wanting suffering for people right. and resisting that urge for, punitive measures,
right.
You know, rehabilitative punishments mm-hmm. or consequence I'm into.
Right.
You know, restorative justice. I'm not into punitive justice.
Mm-hmm.
So like a weird, you know, a parallel, and this is not going to be a political tangent, but like on, you know, Twitter, we were like, that's a whole thing, but there's been a whole thing in this post-election climate where people, there's an attitude out there among people where it's like, you know, everybody who voted for Trump, who are all like losing their insurance and are going to have a really worse life because, hey, guess what? We're all going to have a very much worse life mm-hmm. Because of this. They're just like, well, fuck them. They deserve it. And like, that's a pretty odious attitude. Like somebody, yeah, there's like an essay that somebody wrote where it's like, fuck those coal miners getting black lung. They voted for this. And yeah. It's like, yep. Should they have voted for it? Absolutely not. You know, like there was a terrible mistake. Do they deserve to lose their health insurance for it? No, because no. Part of the reason why I think that's a mistake is one of my core principles is everyone deserves healthcare.
Yeah.
Like that's more important to than vengeance.
A net decrease in suffering is good for everybody.
Yes. And that's how I feel about this wall in this video game. Like it's not, you know, at the time yeah. there wasn't the parallel, but it's just like, no, nope, you know, the idea that like, oh, those fuckers deserve it. No, nope, you know, no tough love, man. I cannot get on board with tough love as like a, from a governing body.
No.
Like that's, you know, restorative, rehabilitative, yeah. Not just like, you know, you did this, now get fucked.
Yeah.
You know, here's some suffering.
Yeah.
Like I'm not into it.
And especially, especially in this setting where the gods are fallible, you know, they are mortals who ascended by defeating a previous god or by, you know, doing some kind of huge and notable act, you know, this yeah. kind of failsafe, it is something that doesn't hold them to accountability. Like yes. it is
unlike
entirely
our elected representatives, which are infallible.
Right. You know, like, yeah. I wasn't calling that an exception to it, but no, it's like, you know, like if you look at this, it doesn't, you know, knowledge of the Forgotten Realms gods actually helps you towards this decision. Right. It's like, oh, just like this is unjust. You are you're using the souls as currency, you know, like, and no way is this any better than the Blood War or in conscripting, you know, evil souls, you know, to fight forever for this unjust cause. Like there is absolutely no justice to this. And there is no regard for human life, you know, or, you know, human peace or human prosperity inside of this. It isn't done for anybody's benefit except for the gods and the immediate people who serve them, which is bullshit.
Yep. And that's where, you know, that's where I'm with Kaelin on this, you know, team Kaelin, fuck the wall. And yep. I was a hard wall, you know, hard line, fuck the wall.
Well, I was also a hard line, fuck the wall in the election too. So.
Yeah. It's 100%, you know, like just call me anti-suffering. It's, you know, what a cocktard.
I am fine.
You know,
with
what a lib idiot. What a lib idiot. Yeah. Like, you know,
I just, I mean, obviously you've heard the, I'm a cuck. I'm a libtard thing from Tim.
Yeah. I'm way into that.
Yeah. And if you're bugged about this, if you're bugged about us bringing the political side of this, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, this is a game that demands you bring your own moral complexity and values to it. You know?
And it's the parallel is not imagined by us.
Right.
You know, they're moral issues that are universal and are, you know, not directly related, but there's, you know, the game is good because it deals with universal human truth.
Yeah.
It's not a specific, oh, it's, you know, it's just a story about these fantasy characters doing this thing. Like, you know,
yeah,
no, that's not that this is literary on a level that can apply to things. So anyway, so that's what Akashi did. And we're kind of stuck between these two people. The Red Woman's behind us. Ahriman is ahead of us.
Right.
And they both have, you know, mildly, like, we don't know everything about the Red Woman yet,
right,
which is kind of an interesting choice because we don't have her whole story, which we learn right after this.
Right.
So we're kind of set up to be a little bit more sympathetic to Ahriman.
Right.
Because we don't know exactly, like, we knew that, you know, we know about the love and everything. We don't know exactly how genuine this is, you know. We don't know the whole story. And there's an element of Ahriman who kind of seems like the victim at this point.
Yeah.
You know, like, but there's also an element of him that's like, oh, this is Yoko and she broke up, you know, like blaming the woman who tempted somebody into something.
Right.
Rather than blaming the person who did it. Like,
yeah, she didn't just step between a man and her God. She stepped against a man and her bro.
Yeah. Yeah. And really it's your bro that made the choice, right, you know? So fuck Ahriman.
Yeah.
You know, like, once you have that context, but you don't get all of the context until after the Red Woman.
Right.
Kind of comes through. And you can try to make them both happy, and it's difficult.
Right.
Diplomacy is the only social skill I have, and I've been putting all, you know, almost all my points into it other than spellcraft and concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, I did not succeed at.
Yeah. Nothing. No dice here either. You know, we've learned from that the Red Woman has escaped from the wall, and, you know, he will fight me, you know, just to get through me to stop her, you know, as she, you know, gets into the sanctum.
So another big fight.
Another big wizard fight. I think there are some elementals and some undead, basically the usual retinue of enemies that you have here. And eventually you pass through, and kind of the first inkling that I got, not the first, because like the voices and the idea of twins that were introduced with Lyanna and the Red Woman, like that, just the something's going on with Sophia. But I walked through and I saw that it was just kind of like a different version of Sophia's room that I saw in the academy.
Yeah.
Where in this one, you know, there are constructs and homunculi kind of like wandering about, just like there were in Sophia's room. And then you look at her and she's just a severely aged version of Sophia. They're not just clones. They're the same soul.
Yeah. This is what Sophia's mother had done, was split herself into different pieces.
Yes.
This was her last resort. I bet there's a lot of that song that would map to this. If I do a very specific
suffocation,
parody.
No breathing inside the wall. Don't give a fuck. We got Bishop. Yeah.
So she had split herself into different things. So you find out that the aunt like represented a part of her. She kept a part of her, the mother that was like the part that, you know, always drove her forward, who was like very demanding and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she put the best of her into Sophia.
Right.
And like Sophia realizes this, like, you don't actually take that active of a part of this.
No.
And it's like pretty touching.
Yeah.
Like I said before, Sophia ends up being kind of a bland character.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a complete character.
No.
Like, what? How good is that? Like, how it's like this thing that was this niggling little, like, in, you know, thought I had about this character. Like, oh, this is not that well developed.
Uh-huh.
It's like, no, it's because there's all this complexity to a person that's intentionally not here.
Right. Yeah. Like, she might as well be a construct until, you know, until this happens, until you realize this part of it, which again, plays into their past as people who, you know, make these constructs themselves. And it even goes down to, like, Sophia was sent to you with, like, one mission. You know, keep this person safe, get them to Liena, and treat them as though you love them.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Really fantastic, like, kind of reveal here.
Yeah. No, it's,
and it's not, it could be like a VV, Final Fantasy IX, like, existential nightmare for Sophia, but it's really not, because, like, passing on the best of yourself is essentially the best case scenario for parenthood in general.
I'm very happy you said that, because I was going to make that point. It was going to sound very sappy coming out of me. Yeah. So I'm happy you did that.
Sorry. Yeah. It ends up being, like, really weirdly sweet.
Yeah.
Like, and this is all of the sense, like, the Merkel part, like, this is, you know, 25 minutes of time, but it's all next to each other and it's all so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's top of the pops, like, stuff that we've done for the show as far as kind of plot turning and elegance in writing and characterization. And it's so concentrated.
Yeah.
It's very, very brief span with some, like, lackluster fights in the middle, you know, that are fine. But, like, there are parts of this game when it's at its best, it's like toe to toe with anything we've done for the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy to hear you say one of those
parts where, like, this is, like, as good as we've done. The whole game is not, you know, there's mechanically, it's not quite solid enough to, like, unseat, you know, the top three or whatever.
It's still a mixed recommendation.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but it's what you get are really high highs from this.
Yeah.
So,
oh man. So, you know, you can try and play this like, oh, a red woman, my love, I am Akachi, and she realizes that for being false, right? Like, you know, she recognizes that all that is left of Akachi is this hunger, and that's why she did what she did. You know, she took the shard from me in order to open the gate to the city of the dead. But she also kind of chose me as the host for this because of my will, because both Akachi and myself had the will to capture and master the Gith sword.
Yeah, you were the Kalak Cha.
Yes,
so this thing that was your other prophecy from this other game set you up for this new one, you know, set you up for this new thing.
Yeah. So Nefrit was the one who pulled the shard from my chest. And again, she gave Sophia that mission. And kind of, this is an amazing thesis for this. Love will break an oath, shatter a man's faith, and outlive gods. Like, that is the angle that they're coming from. And that's a little bit like why it's hard to buy. Like, they're trying to, most of the options for dealing with the red woman relate to saying, like, why the fuck did you do this to me? Like, feeling betrayed, feeling like you were used, feeling like the red woman is a monster, that Sophia was complicit, but I can't, I just, like, let's do this. I'm the one person who can help all of you. So let's fuck it up. Like, I don't see the point of view that says, like, oh, like anybody here besides, you know, Ahriman and Merkel and Kellenborg deserve justice.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Me too. Like, it does a really good job of, like, trying to quash that feeling of vengeance.
Yeah.
You know, because vengeance is not a good urge, you know? It's very cool. We learned a couple other little details. The incarnation of yourself that knew Oku, was a Rishimi wizard, was the previous mask.
Yeah.
And struck a deal with Oku to get sealed in his lair, his barrows. And he was trying to fight it too. You know, he was a good version. This is so tormenty, actually, like the different arc incarnations, who had done different things before.
Yeah. So we learn a little bit about the way that this works. So when Akachi, you know, this faceless man, this, you know, hunger, what walks, takes a host, the host soul takes his place on the wall. And if you're able to find your soul and replace it, within yourself, you can snuff out the emptiness, because Akachi only exists as a void. Fill his void in the vessel. You rescue your soul from the wall and then end the curse forever.
Yes.
but yeah. No, we're gonna find out that's not the full story.
Yeah, that's not the full story. There's elements of that can work.
Yeah.
But I don't kill her. Amanjiro says later. I'll see you. I'll be around if you need me later.
Yep. I'll come. I want to swing in at the last moment and be like a total badass hero.
Yeah. If I can. I'm the Knights of the Veil. I'm gonna fix everything. So you now are going to the very bottom, tippity bottom of the tomb of the dead god's vault.
Yes.
And this is your point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
You get to do the thing to your party where it's like, hey, are you sure you want to do this, etc. Are you down with this?
Yeah.
And
So so for me, this was really only an interaction with Gan and with Sophia. Kaelin was always going to come here because she is part of the Second Crusade. And I was part of the first, as Akachi. So for me, Gan being the buddy and not the love interest, he's like, he didn't think he would ever want to follow somebody else. But after he met me, he's like, the gods themselves are going to need to keep themselves in check because of how much you can influence worshipers. Like, come on, let's do this. We're buddies forever. So I assume Gan was like, was this about the point where like, okay, my love, let's go and defeat the gods
themselves?
Yeah, this
could be where we decided to go be in love. There's an amazing ending bit with that too that I'll talk about in a second, which I didn't get because I got the like good ending. Uh-huh. If you get the second best ending, there's an amazing line that ties into that.
Oh, nice.
Which is really, really good.
Yeah. For me, this is where I decided, hey, let's go full in with Sophia. And so, Sophia says like, yes, I was told to treat you like I love you, but both of us are not what we seem. And both of us, are separate from the mission that has been given to us, the essential nature that drives us. I'm an incomplete soul. You are a person without a soul. And still we've managed to forge this connection. Are my feelings in vain? And I say, no. Yeah. And we admit our love. The perk that you get from I about to say be loving.
You've been be loving her.
Yes. The perk that you get from be loving Sophia is that she will, like, having her around will protect you from damaging spells.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's I can't remember exactly what the Gan one is, but it's something similar. I love mechanical perks tied to storyline, things like that.
Pretty great.
So you, regardless of who it is, it's a pair of jokers and you're both wild and you're heading into the feud plane.
Jesus. Yeah. So you go into the feud plane, which is where the City of Judgment sits, and you meet your old buddies. You meet Zoab, your planetar, your celestial guy.
Well, this is another crusade.
Yeah.
Like this is a new crusade against the wall, which gives me the impression like, the first time this happened, I was kind of surprised that this was all set up. And I'm still like, there's probably some text to it. And maybe you can help clarify for me. Is this just something that's been happening? Or did they meet me here because they were like bound whenever Akachi starts this thing?
It's a little bit of both. It hasn't been happening the entire time. Like you can say like, whoa, you guys have been waiting here for a long time. It's been centuries. And then you can say, no, we awoke and came here because we knew you were coming and we need to fulfill our duty.
So it's very tormenty.
Yes.
Like you have these people who are your vassals who are committed to helping you with this thing. Mm-hmm. It's very like these would have been your companions in a previous incarnation.
Yep.
Like the Akachi one that went and did, did the crusade.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of summoned back here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I gotcha.
So in addition to Zoab, who is kind of rallying the forces, you meet Ramek, who is a floating skull.
That's supposed to be an archlich, dog.
Is it?
Yeah. that's what happens because archliches are floating skulls. They're not 6 feet tall though.
Yeah.
With glowing eyes. So,
like 6 feet tall doesn't sell. It's 6 feet in diameter.
Yeah. Ramek is really amazing. Like he's goofy.
Yep.
Ramek is very goofy.
And then there's a blue dragon named Seiryu.
Yeah.
And so you kind of charge to the gate and you meet Kaelin's former companions. Who have all been killed and conscripted into the service of Kelimvor. And like this is a stalemate. It's a standoff. Like the Second Crusade has failed, the one that Kaelin was attempting to lead, and so now they're here. And this is a point where you can either join the people who are guarding the gate, say to Kaelin, I'm only in this for my soul, I don't care about the wall. Or go whole hog with Kaelin against the wall and say, fuck it. Let's fight everybody.
Yeah, fuck the wall. I will declare war on the City of the Dead.
Yes.
Which of course I'm going to do that. Yes. Yeah, like there's no part of me that's not going to declare war on the city on the dead. So this kind of sets up, this is another kind of do the three things.
Yeah, yeah.
Gamey part that's not, again, it just feels like we needed some more game at the end of this game.
It's very slight though. The like,
yeah,
the,
you don't have to do very much, and your old friend, there's some little neat parts, and then your friend Ramek also has his like undead legion here who like this very first part when you decide to go all in, you do a little fight at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, you get to choose. It's like, do you want to be at the wall and fight with the dragon? Mm-hmm. Do you want to go get these codexes for Ramek?
Yeah.
And then a third one. That I can't remember. Go talk to the voice of
Kellenbore. Yeah, like talk to, because Kellenbore will not sully his hands. He has a champion and a representative at the Basilica.
It's not just sully his hands. It's a mistake he had made previous in another, predecessor had made.
Okay.
So, you know, when the 6 years ago when what's his head was deposed.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't want to make the same mistake.
Yeah.
You knew these in any order. And they're just kind of combat exploration things.
Yeah.
Here.
You end up, so if you go with Seiryu, you can fight alongside them, and then one of his scales falls off. He's very kind of like salty, like, all right, I've fulfilled my duty. I'm going to fly away. You can use his scale as a very good shield if you want to.
It's kind of cool to have fight with a dragon on your side.
Oh yeah.
Like he breathes onto lightning and it's pretty neat. So get that shield. You have to go to this temple, and find the Codex of the Dead, which will pinpoint where on the wall your soul is.
Yeah.
And this is, there's a little bit of trickiness here because what order you do these in matters.
Yes.
Because time is of the essence. If you go to the codex first, I did the defend the wall first because I was right there.
Me too. Yeah.
But if you go to the codex first, there's two books that Ramek wants.
Yep.
One's the codex and one of them is another one. If you get there right away, you can get both books.
Hmm.
You can give it to Ramek, which you don't want to do.
Nope, because he wants to be the new god of the dead.
Yeah, because Ramek is going to do a power play. This like big cartoon floating skull is going to do a kind of silly power play here.
So there's the actual Cole that lives inside my heart who doesn't want the gigantic floating skull to be the new god of the dead because he hasn't exactly like made his case for me. But there's the version of Cole that exists on podcast that definitely wants to make the gigantic floating skull president. I had to decide which version of Cole would prevail in this game. Yeah.
And it's a credit to the game that you know, you're invested enough to do some real RP.
Yep.
The way you stop it from happening is actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Where you find the book that he needs, and even if you just find one of them that he wants, they ask you to go get. When you pull it off the shelf, you can sabotage it.
Yeah, you can drop it. It's so ancient as to burst to dust if it hits the floor. Yeah.
And then it's a check. You can tell him like, oh, in the battle it got damaged, and he believes you or doesn't. If he doesn't believe you fight him.
Yeah.
And his all of his undead legions that have been engaging all the paladins in the city,
mm-hmm.
Will turn on you as well.
Yeah.
So
it's a big fight. Yep. But I felt very good about keeping this guy from becoming the new god of the dead because I don't want there to be a god of the dead.
Yeah, that's the thing. Or I want that god of the dead needs to at least his wall's gotta go.
Yeah.
Kellenbore seems pretty cool, but gotta keep it. Gotta get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the voice of Kellenbore.
Mm-hmm.
He lets you past,
right?
You know,
right.
Like, he's just like, yeah, no, this is fine. Like, we're gonna cut our losses. Like, I'm not gonna die for you.
Mm-hmm.
At this point,
there's another battle with Ahriman here. It's like a last gasp kind of thing. But you know, the final thing here, the scrivener, the one who is writing for Kellenbore, says like, hey, we'll make one final deal with you. I don't take his deal. Kill him to get the codex. And then this kind of gets me to the Wall of the Faithless.
Yes. This is the point where since we've talked to Kellenbore at this point, right? Kellenbore has shown, this is where he's at.
Yeah. This like he's waiting for you here because he knows you're going to come get your soul.
And the reason he knows is because he's the narrator.
Yep.
So the whole game, you have been told this is a story you're being told by Kellenbore.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I walked up, I'm like, wait a minute, why does he have that stupid fucking voice? He sounds like he's reading ad copy. Like, oh no, he's the narrator. Neat.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And the idea being, so Kellenbore lays out his argument.
Yeah.
Against, you know, pro the wall.
Right. Bring down the wall and mortals will see they cannot be held accountable for their faith.
Yes. Eliminate the death penalty and people will just go crazy.
Yep.
And murder each other and steal because they will not be scared. Yeah. You know, I not necessarily. So at this point, I'm full anti-wall.
Right.
And I'm like, nope, I'm taking it down. And he's kind of patient, but kind of not, you know, mm-hmm. like, he's like, you can't. I'm going to permit you to try because of this injustice done to you. Like, yeah. I'm not my predecessor. I'm not Merkel, you know, which that's that whole story with like the Merkel giving way to Kelimvor makes me want to read Forgotten Realms novels.
Me too.
Because it's like such a cool idea that like there was a god of death. He was kind of impartial, but ended up being this like irony loving Joker jackass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the regular Joker turned into the Jared Leto Joker. And then this other guy came along who was like the better version of him.
Yeah, but he's still, you know? I mean, like in this world, in the story, he's still tied to the decisions that were made. Like,
yeah,
you know,
the previous administration has long legs, you know,
and he tells a story like, you know, like I was like you. I thought that people deserved more mercy than they actually do. You know, for my first couple of years as a god of death, you know, I made a lot of mistakes on ill-founded kindness. And so, you know, like you're not acting with experience here. And if I took down the wall, if I allowed you to do this, I would have the entire pantheon coming down on me, because the wall and the god of death are the pressure release valve. The wall, like he says, is what keeps people accountable. And so I say, hey, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And so I told him, like, you're a fucking coward for not closing Guantanamo.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. Like, but he still lets you go for it. You know, he's still like, you can go there because of this injustice, but like, reconsider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're not going to be able to do it. And spoiler, you're not.
Right.
You know, you can't actually, we have no power to actually change the government in a democratic system.
Right.
But the, man, I'm not expecting all these parallels. Like, so yeah, it doesn't really matter. But just very much like real life, you make your small victories when you can. Right. And that's what matters.
So you approach the wall, and you, you know, pull your, you pull this away. You pull out your soul. I forget where it happens here. But at some point, you know, he said, like, when you're talking about the mask, Merkel was so enamored of his cruelty that he didn't see its flaws and what is going on. So again, this is more complicated. As you pull this out, you have to fight against the wall to free yourself, because it is so deeply embedded, you know, because Akachi had been in there, you had taken his place. And so like the entire, kind of army of the City of Judgment is coming after you. And you're also being zapped by these gigantic pylon turrets, paying you back for all those Mephits that you killed before.
Yeah. Yep. But you fight the wall, you free yourself. And you think this is going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get it. But you sink to the ground and your dreams rise to meet you.
It's not enough.
Yeah. It's a trap.
Yep.
Essentially.
So you journey.
Merkel's last laugh. Yeah.
You journey into your own soul.
Yes. Which is full of callbacks and stuff to Neverwinter Nights 2. Mm-hmm. Of course, because you are the same character. So you are in Crossroad Keep. You start out there. And this is part of your soul, and it's under siege.
Mm-hmm.
And a thing that I love... So the lady in red meets you. Says, the faceless man is here. You need to fight him and confront him.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually the soul of... This is your... This is Akachi. This is the hunger, the beast. Yeah,
this is what remains. He has no face. Therefore, he has to wear a mask.
He has no grace. He said, "Yeah." I don't know the actual name of the rest of that rhyme. The way it goes, but so this is Crossroad Keep. It's all your friends here,
mm-hmm.
and she kind of explains like, keep your memories alive. Mm-hmm. Like, these are your memories of your friends. And one of my favorite like touches of an intersection of kind of like deeper story and theme and video game mechanics.
Yep.
All of your friends here have generic like greetings that they would have, like they feel like NPCs in a video game.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that of course, like these are just like symbols
right.
of the thing, you know? So you don't sit down and have like a deep conversation with Sand, but if you talk to him, he says like a one line that's kind of like Sand would say, you know? And like in this fight with all these like monsters that are coming and the faceless man, the siege is happening. When your friends die, you lose your spirit energy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the direct representation of like the battle for your soul or your willpower.
Yeah.
That you are inside. Super cool. You know, it's possible to keep everybody alive. It's tricky.
Yeah.
But
unfortunately, if somebody dies in your memory, it's not like your eternal sunshine them away. I was real bummed out because Nishka died in this huge frenetic battle. And I like Nishka.
Yeah.
And so you go, you know, after you chase the faceless man away, he flees through the front doors of the keep, and you follow him, and all of a sudden you're in West Harbor.
It's a deeper memory.
Yep.
Like, it's an earlier memory with all your friends from the very beginning of Neverwinter Nights 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those townspeople, so, and same thing, like
you're Starling fighting, and
you're fighting monsters. keeping them away. Your memory represents your thing. This is where I lost people. I didn't lose anybody in Crossroad Keep, but there was a weird pathfinding thing, or I couldn't find the monsters that were fighting
some of the guard. It's more wide open. The courtyard is more contained.
And the Faceless Man is tougher.
Yeah.
So he gets stronger for each one.
Mm-hmm. As you go deeper, and he has more meaty soul to feed on.
Yeah.
And so you reach the, you basically push him off the map. You reach the end, and the Red Woman is here again, saying, "Hey, he's cornered. He's cornered in a deeper memory. He's gone through this portal." And so she tells you, like, "Hey, all these dreams, you know, this has been Akachi's mind, you know," and the boy shows up, and all of a sudden we have these mask fragments. And if you have all of them, this is the check that is kind of passed. You assemble together the mask of the betrayer, right? Mm-hmm. And you wear this, and it looks like the face of the centipede on its back, and you put it on, and it protects you from some of the death magic that he's going to throw about. It makes this fight a little bit easier. And that is the path that you are able to kind of take to introduce his face back to him.
Yes. And do this end boss fight with the Faceless Man, where he has the powers of the betrayer, of the soul eater. Yeah. And you do as well. And he's constantly doing attacks that drain your soul energy. So while you're fighting, you also have to drain soul energy from him.
Mm-hmm.
This is an area where the engine falls down.
Yep.
Visually, the two little centipedes, like two guys just summoning centipede heads, mm-hmm. they kind of like, you know, they look like they're flailing at each other, like little ineffectual like slaps, getting into these like centipede slap fights.
Yeah.
Does not look as cool as, like, you know, the story. I actually know how dramatic this is and how cool it is.
Mm-hmm.
How it looks is kind of comical, I thought.
Yep.
Kind of a bummer. But if you've done the thing, you beat him eventually with the mask. This is how you get the good ending.
Right. Right. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So after you do this, you end up fighting with Kelimvar. And, you know, the wall, you know, hasn't, Okachi's gone to his judgment,
mm-hmm.
you know, to his rest. He's not obliterated, but this is what should have had if Merkel had not intervened.
Right. So you've restored something along the natural order. And because of your actions, you know, Merkel will soon be forgotten because Okachi is gone. And that was his last kind of lifeline to the waking world.
Mm-hmm.
And so the founder's soul, you know, so just talking about what will happen with Sophia now that all this is done, you know, when the founder dies, her soul will pass on to Sophia. So, you know, she's going to find her redemption in this.
She'll become complete.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and then with the good ending, you are free to go adventure, mm-hmm. and your companions decide to stay with you or not. You know, they both kind of will say, other than Keelan will always leave.
Right.
But, you know, Sophia has decided to stay with me. Gan and I got married. There's a little single kind of cut scene with us getting married with Kelgar staying there and Sand. It's kind of like, oh, it's our old buddies got together.
Yep. The old high school buddies. Yeah. Gan decides to follow me because, you know, again, he's tempted by this idea that the orderly gods are going to set their sight on us and we have a tremendous amount of spiritual currency. Spiritual currency comes with many advantages, and Kaelin obviously goes off to continue her fight against the wall because Kaelin
says, like, this, you know, this didn't work. I'm going to keep it up.
Right.
You know, and again, we couldn't get rid of the wall,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that was the change we were not able to affect in the world.
It's bigger than us.
Let's talk about a couple of bad endings.
Yes.
While we're here. So the ending you get, if you don't do the mask side stuff, the second best ending is very similar. Like you are stuck in the realm of the dead.
Right.
So you cannot leave. You cannot be free. You have to act as I don't know exactly how it articulates because I did not get it,
mm-hmm.
but you act as an anchor so you still do all the good things, but you don't get to leave. You make your sacrifice.
Yeah. Like, this is where you're going to live out your life, basically serving for the good of the City of Judgment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the really great line I mentioned before with the marriage proposal thing with Gan is, if you do this, he decides if you got high enough favor and you're in love with him, he stays with you,
mm-hmm.
which he doesn't have to. And the way he says it, he says, you know, when all those other couples say they'll be together forever, they don't know what they're talking about. And it sounds like, that's so good.
Yep. Like, yeah. That's pretty, like, great.
Yeah. I'm way into that. Like, you know, and it's very sweet too. This idea that, like, hey, this is kind of like an eternal purgatory, but at least mm-hmm. I'll be here with you. You know,
yeah.
Again, love super important and worth a pretty big sacrifice.
Yeah.
you know, for this. He essentially, you know, interred himself mm-hmm. in the city of the dead as like an atheist, as somebody who does not believe in this god.
Like he converts to Kellenverism, and so does Sophia. Actually, she is also somebody who does not have a deity. You know, in order to, you know, in order to bridge that gap and remain. It should be noted that if you come into this campaign as a cleric of Kellenvor, mm-hmm. Or as somebody who worships Kellenvor, some of this dialogue changes, not substantially, but it does affect things. As somebody who worships the god of the dead, the truly bad ending, you know, this is really praised because it is sown, you know, throughout. From the moment we find out we can devour spirits and devour souls, and, you know, kind of engage in this and really ramp up the hunger and just completely unseat gods and feed this abomination, you know, our leftovers when we are full. Kind of, we mentioned this back at the beginning of the previous episode, but like it becomes an origin story. You know, you decide, you know, the final act, you know, instead of sparing the betrayer and giving him the mask and, you know, putting him into the natural order of things, you devour him. You basically devour the thing that has inhabited you and become an even emptier kind of emptiness, a new avatar of hunger, more bolstered, this huge eldritch abomination who will continue wandering the world, not even bound to the rules that the betrayer was bound to.
Yeah. And you, so this kind of, we talked about one of many. If you gave Merkel to one of many, this ends with a fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of which, it ends with a fight. So if you gave Merkel to one of many, mm-hmm. You have to fight one of many. If you turn into this Eldritch Abomination, all your companions turn on you.
Yeah.
And you have one final fight, but they give you an ability. Even if you do the good ending, you get an ability for solving, you know, killing the faceless man.
Mm-hmm. It's like mass devour or something like that.
Yeah. And like it devours souls from like full health or something like that. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, essentially just so you can kill your companions in one hit, you know, in this final bit. And the ending is pretty badass of you like walking the plains, leaving empty villages in your wake until the mm-hmm. gods have to like team up to destroy you.
Yep.
You know, which again, you would be the antagonist of another one of these games. Mm-hmm. And it's just like some of them said that they destroyed you. Some of the other ones said you had escaped. It's inconclusive.
Yeah.
Pretty great. Mm-hmm. And like the actual, like the, I watched this one and like the dialogue Kellenvor has about it is pretty good too.
Yeah.
Like nobody expected it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So my particular epilogue, you know, continued traveling away, left the city of the damned. Sophia, you know, as the previous incarnations died, you know, gained the knowledge of a dozen lifetimes, but because I didn't deal with one of many, and I had awakened him, this is super tragic. One of many kills Sophia and I have to kill one of many. So like we're married, you know, like we have traveled together as these two wizard lovers, and he, you know, sought her out as kind of this petty act of vengeance. And, you know, I killed and sent all of the souls to the wall and kind of continued living in celibacy because Sophia was the only one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah. What happened to Sophia and yours?
I think we just hung out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's anything, I don't remember anything specifically noteworthy.
Yeah.
To that, my Kaelin ending is worse than yours, and I don't know exactly how that happened.
Okay. Describe Kaelin, your Kaelin ending.
She continues her kind of chaotic, you know, need to destroy this wall. Mm-hmm. Because of something I did, and I don't remember the exact details, her teammates ended up betraying her. The last time she did it, like the third crusade or mm-hmm. the fourth crusade, the last, next one she does, or one of the ones she does, mm-hmm. End up destroying, like, betraying her. And, she barely escaped with her life. And she was like left to wander the earth. Like she couldn't go back to the Celestials mm-hmm. because she had turned her back on her god and could not like face her crusade anymore.
Yeah.
So it was like left without purpose and, you know, and super depressed.
Yeah.
But the best case scenario for her is still just hammering away at that.
Yeah, it's still kind of an eternity of you know, of a futile pursuit. So for me, she continued the assault on the wall, and her kind of growing extremism kind of drove all of her companions away from her. So they stopped just short of trying to frag her and just kind of left. And throughout this process, her wings grew dark, but she knew that she was still right. Which, I mean, that still feels, I mean, it's not good, but it's not, you know, as pathetic as what you just laid out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still a bummer. It's still like she never succeeds in her goal.
Yeah.
You know, like that can't happen.
Yeah. I didn't get any details about Ganiev, or not Ganiev, Gan. So is it just like with you, Gan is kind of rolling around being your Husabandu?
yep, being husbandos, we walk, you know, walk around and explore dreams and yeah. do stuff like that.
Yeah. So for my night captain, I ended up returning to West Harbor, and realized the love that Dagon bore for me. Fuck him. He's a dick.
I had that pop up too. That came up in my thing and I'm like, really? And you know, that we appraised the first one about how it allows you to be agnostic about that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
the degree that which you resent Dagon or like whether you want to put up with his bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty strange.
Yeah.
So that they kind of retconned his happy ending into that.
Yeah. I don't want that. Yeah. What I do want is that Kelgar return to me too. And we kind of go back to Crossroad Keep and, you know, get the old band back together and continue yeah. kind of serving as, you know, the protectors of this land.
That happened for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that ends up being the ending.
Yeah.
of the game.
That is Mask of the Betrayer. Gary, I'm so happy that we did this.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I want the show to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's a game I never would have played of my own volition. You know, like I might have gotten around to it, but like, you know, an external force having me sit down and play this, and, you know, it's still flawed, right? Like, it's still built on a pretty, you know, shaky foundation in terms of engine, mm-hmm. in terms of play. But just the shift in priorities and kind of the lessons it feels like they learned in telling a better, more cohesive, more personal and affecting story. Like, this entire episode has been revelation after revelation of stuff that we're kind of comparing to Torment because that's the closest thing that we have. In the absence of Torment, it would still be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. it is doing what I want this kind of game to do. With my own personal priorities. And I would, you know, I would hesitate to recommend it to folks just because of that shaky foundation. But if you can get over it and if you have the patience to put the time into it, yeah, it's totally worth it because those highs are some of the highest we've seen on the show.
I would end up recommending it and probably saying, which is, you know, me not taking the advice I was given, but say like skip Neverwinter Nights 2 and just listen to our episodes about it.
Yep.
Like there wasn't, you know, if there had been a Kena, if I was just a regular, you know, a civvy.
Yep.
And there was a Kenan Rinse episode of, you know, Neverwinter Nights 2, or there was a Watcher of Fireballs and I didn't, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. help create it.
Yeah.
Then I would have done that same thing.
Yeah. Do as we say, not as we do, because we did Neverwinter Nights 2 because we didn't want to jump.
So you
right
don't have to.
Yeah.
yeah. We play bad games. So you don't have to.
Yeah.
it's not a bad game. Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah.
My time with it. It's amazing though. The difference.
Yeah.
Like it's the same. The most charitable I can feel about it when I think about it is that they were setting a baseline. Like this is us, like, you know, they were commissioned and it's like, hey, make a big rousing D&D story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, like prophecy and the ancient war with the Gith and the King of Shadows is back. Like, let's do a D&D campaign. And they did it. And then they were like, you know, okay, we're on the hook for a couple of expansions. yeah. What can we do?
Let's
and then
be
just,
Obsidian.
yeah. Let's actually like, let's put our A team on this and see what we can do. And like, it's really hard for me to think of a more consistent studio that like delivers stuff like this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just what like, was it? The Dishonored studio.
Yeah. Like, Arcane does like really, really great work too, yeah, but they've got, you know, they've only got a few games, you know,
right.
And it's not the same kind of like, they're really, really amazing to play, but this is every game we've done from these folk
mm-hmm.
have something that's like just amazing that
right.
you don't get elsewhere, you know? So even something like more flawed, like Alpha Protocol, which is, you know, some, you know, same people
yep.
involved, like still has these things that are like, this is not perfect, but like no game does this kind of different factions working against each other kind of dialogue and consequence in story. And this is them at their like strongest with that, where it's not like just the story is the strongest, mm-hmm. you know, or like, you know, in the terms of games, like there are a lot of great stories in games,
yeah.
but that kind of like unapologetically complicated, unapologetically like literary,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the way that you have these themes repeating, this kind of foreshadowing, the way it's like a very intricate machine, you know, so like things that feel like they are to no purpose end up serving a like a very important purpose.
Yeah.
Later, these things that are things that make, you know, Torment so special
mm-hmm.
Are just like on full effect here.
Yeah.
And just like, man, this is like these guys that like, you know, this isn't quite the height of their powers, but this is one of those things where it's like, man, the people who wrote this, who like made this plot and wrote these dialogues, like should never have to work another day in their life.
No, like they're,
you know, like this is one of the best, like one of the best expressions of these themes and everything that I've
yeah.
experienced.
I mean, just the studio, this team, these writers, they're treasures who make treasures.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not like gunning for a job with them. Like I'm not out here sucking dick just to suck dick, but like, I don't know, just consistently I've just found so much delight in what they've made, you know, and just, I'm kind of a believer, you know, like in a, my faith is not shaken in them in the way that my faith has been shaken in certain studios in recent days, you know?
Yeah. It's really impressive. And this is, it's just like, I think that the theming here is about faith and love, you know, like that, this is what we're talking about here. And like faith, love and justice, you know, there's lots of kind of things about it, but like the intersection of those points, as a theme is slightly less unique than the theme of in Torment, like the really heavy, like everyone has a past and you are the sum of your choices. In a way that doesn't always reflect on you immediately, you know, or won't always feel. I think that is something that is more personally resonant to me.
Yeah.
Like not only I think it's executed a little bit better, but I also think it's something that like touches my heart a little bit more. That is like the only thing, you know, story-wise and kind of theming-wise that puts this a little bit behind that.
Yeah. I mean, just like a little bit though, like they're very much in a similar echelon, if not the same one.
Yeah. And they're very similar and also nice companion pieces to each other.
Yeah. And you know, in both, I found myself asking kind of serious questions of myself. Like I was kind of sounding different parts of my kind of just a moral and ethical fabric to figure out how to do this. Like there were difficult questions that the game was forcing me to answer as distinct from difficult choices, because choice is a loaded word in video games. These were questions. And I think that, you know, for me personally, those themes of, you know, love, faith and justice, those are, you know, things worth thinking about, you know, just like the past is, like it is less unique, but it is no less kind of grand to me.
Very important.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy. Like I'm happy to be out from under it. Like, 'cause I hate having a huge task hanging over me.
Yeah.
But having played it, this has been time well spent, and I've really enjoyed kind of going back over it and, you know, hearing that you like it as well too.
Yeah, I really loved it. Yeah. I'm really, really happy to have played it. And there's no reason why I shouldn't have before, you know, but it is extremely good.
Yeah.
Extremely good. Love it. Recommended. And even if, you know, if you don't end up playing it because you can't get past those barriers, I understand. Mm-hmm. But hopefully listening to this will give you some of that.
Yeah.
After this, so next episode will be the appendix episode. After that, we're talking about Mega Man 2 and 3.
Yes.
So if you have things to write in about that, please hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact. Really appreciate that.
Similarly, if you have anything to say about Dishonored 2, which is the game after Mega Man, or Castlevania Symphony of the Night, all of these are very good games that a lot of people have played. So we'd like to hear from you. Again, duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yes. What else? Do we want to announce what's coming after that? Do we know, or is that actually a poll and we're not sure?
We know, but okay, let's usually go three ahead.
Okay, and we'll wait. Tantalizing glimpse.
So
you guys can wait for that. If you want to support us, you can hit us up at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Hit us up. That is the best way to do so, and we would really appreciate it. And even like a little bit of money gives you cool rewards, and a lot of bit of money gives you even cooler rewards, and all of it is awesome.
Yeah. If you have received Amazon gift cards over the course of the holidays, because this is coming out on the 29th, so you probably still have some of those burn a hole in your pocket, consider going to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and using the Amazon link there when you buy your NES classics and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because that is a way to support the network. We get a small cut of the proceeds of whatever you buy, and that is a huge way to kind of help us without costing yourself anything extra beyond the things you would have bought.
Makes a big difference. I think that's probably good. Ratings, reviews, all those things are very useful.
Yeah, I
appreciate it.
If you've listened to all this, thank you so much for coming on the ride. This is a lesser known game in the WRPG kind of sphere, but I wouldn't have changed anything.
Yeah. I'm glad that we spent this time on this.
Yeah.
This felt like a well deserved and well spent time, I think.
Yeah.
And hopefully you guys liked it and enjoyed spending this 5 weeks with us talking about this game. So I think that's probably about it.
I think so. Take care, everybody. Be safe. We want to see you in the new year. We have a lot of great stuff planned, and we'd love to have you along.
Absolutely. So until next time, what should they watch out for, Cole?
Watch out for the wall, because that thing's still out there.
Fuck yeah.
So ordinarily at the end of these episodes, we like to put in a little fun Easter egg or something we clipped out. Didn't really have anything that we clipped out. But I want to tell you, I was planning to put at the end of this, the rap song from the end of The Mask or the rap song from the end of The Son of the Mask. They don't exist. Like I had to have dreamed them or something. That's weird, right? So just so you know, the reason why there's no little fun thing here is I spent this whole time being like, oh, I don't need to clip something out. I'm just going to throw in that rap song from The Mask. No dice. It's a sad, sad day that you learn that the Jamie Kennedy vehicle, Son of the Mask, did not end with a rap song about a son of the mask.